Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, one of these days I got to get that sound effect of the Carnival Midway music. You know the one I'm talking about. That one. Or maybe the saber dance while we're at it. Or the March of the Elephants. Or the March of the Children from The King and I. Who knows? But we got to have some music! We've got an anthem for, or an opening hymn for prayer meeting Wednesday. By God, we need something for Monday. We need some carnival barking music, because this is Moran Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob, it's Monday, and I'm thrilled to pieces to be back behind the microphone. Saturdays and Sundays are the dullest days of my life. Ho! This is going to be a good one.
Yes, yes, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. You will not believe your ears. You will not believe your ears at the stunning array of Morans presented for you this Monday evening, Eastern Standard Time. Just peek behind the curtains of the tent. Don't look too long without you get your ticket. You know, the tickets are only $2,500 a month. That should work out to about 25 cents for every person listening to the horn. Unfortunately, they don't pay for their tickets. Only a few of you do, so that works out. Everybody pony up $250,000. No, it's a joke. No, step right up. You will not believe your ears. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes of the program. We have Morans oplenty. We have violent Morans, crazy Morans, weird Morans. But all of them share one thing in common and one thing only. They are right-wing Morans. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
Yes, indeedy, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. And, of course, we've got a lot of nominees. In fact, I had to remind Marty just before the show, he wanted to nominate Caribou Barbie. You know, Mussolini. You know, the Godzilla from Wasilla. He wanted to nominate her, and I had to remind Marty, no, she's been... We have retired her wolf's paw. She can no longer compete because Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, Godzilla from Wasilla need only look at her watch to do something moranic, because she is, in fact, the walking embodiment of moranity. No, we have to look elsewhere. Lucky for us, there's plenty of other bushes to beat. Oh, Jesus, the Secret Service will be here any minute. No, we got lots of... Did I miss something? Does William Shatner have a TV show? Is it online? Is it on an actual TV station? Does he have an interview program? Because this is nuts. Last night I was cruising around looking at you know, my favorite sites, my go-to sites, just to see what the Morans have been up to over the weekend, because Saturdays and Sundays are when the Morans come out from behind the baseboards and scurry around in the dark like the little human cockroaches that they are. And I saw this clip, this otherwise unexplainable clip. It's William Shatner interviewing Flush Flimball. Do I have that right? Yeah, I previewed it. Not kidding. But for our first Moran Monday nominee, who better than the oxymoron, the man who sent out thousands of dollars in a cigar box and was brought back thousands of dollars worth of street drugs and never did a day's time for it. at the same time that he had been railing for others to go to prison for exactly what he was doing. The man who takes somebody else's prescription for Viagra on an all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic and comes back with one missing. Who better, indeed, than Flush Flemball to begin our nomination process this Moran Monday evening on the Horn?
Here's my premise, and you agree with it or not, that if you have money, you're going to get health care. If you don't have money, it's more difficult.
If you have money, you're going to get a house on the beach. If you don't have money, you're going to live in a bungalow somewhere. Right. That's
right, but we're talking about health care.
What's the difference?
The difference in this one.
Okay. Clearly, the drugs did do more to his brain than we were initially willing to admit. What's the difference between living in a bungalow and having health insurance? Check me if I'm wrong, but does your bungalow come with a fully staffed medical team and a completely staffed pharmacy? Jesus Christ, don't tell Flush. If it does, he'll be over there and he'll be chewing up the goddamned OxyContin for the refreshing burst of flavor before you can say, Matt Drudge. If you have money, you're going to get a house on the beach. If you don't have money, you're going to live in a bungalow somewhere. Huh? Does this... Okay, are you okay? Because I'm not okay. Does this make... No, it doesn't. I'm a little with it.
We're talking about health care.
No.
Not a house and a bungalow.
You're assuming that there's some morally superior aspect to health care than there is
no,
to a house.
I'm not moral at all. I want to keep this...
Well, that was nice of Shatner to admit. I'm not moral at all. But isn't there a moral perspective to health care? Or at least shouldn't there be to the right wing who are running around all the time thumping their Bibles? Granted, they don't read them, but they thump them. Shouldn't there be? Isn't there that I was sick and you visited me not, and if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me? So the fact that we don't have health care for every American should mean to fundamentalist, literally minded, literally taking Bible, toting, thumping, the strychnine drinking, floor rolling, the tongue speaking, prophesying, the right wing fundamentalist Christianity, shouldn't that mean that they're denying Jesus health care? I mean, isn't that what that says? But you know what? It's not surprising that Flush Flemball couldn't see a moral aspect to health care, because Flush Flemball is, after all, a psychopath. If not that, okay, all right, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a sociopath. Flush Flemball... Well, let's let him and Shatner duke it out. It's a very short clip.
Subject, for the moment, on the health care thing.
All right.
So now it's the health care.
I'm talking about health care.
Okay, so talk about...
No, you're not!
So isn't the premise, isn't this valid, that the health care system today is breaking the country?
No,
it's not.
Nope, it's not. It's not. Everything is just damn fine. Shut up. Look the other way. These are not the droids you're looking for. Everything's coming up roses for flushing. No. Okay, there's the first time I've sung at you this evening. Shame on me. I promise I'll try not to do it again. I know it's so disturbing when I do. But no, you see, Rush lives in that place, Flush lives in that place, where there is no there is no moral component to health care. And there's no how about that? There's no economic component to health care either. But really, I think this is the part along the road after the bats have flown by, when the acid starts to kick in for Flush. Because you don't have to go very far down the road with him to sort of extend the metaphor. You don't have to go very far down the road with him before he's bloviating on his program about how if we have universal single-payer health care, it'll break the country. And he just said it's not. But Obamacare was going to ruin America. But it's, according to him, his words, not. Could it be that Flush Flimball cannot handle Captain Kirk? Yes, first Captain Kirk took down the lizard people of Rectilus 9. And now he's taking down the greatest enemy we've seen since the Borg. He's taking down Flush Flimball, alien overlord.
I don't believe it is. And if
but
it is...
we're told that it is.
Of course we're told that, because that's a way to get us to act like sheep and go along
well,
with
but
this.
How do you know that? That's, you know, the sum total of what I want to ask you politically is, how do you know?
It's my job. It's my life. It's my career. It's my passion. I've studied this stuff. I want the best country.
I dropped out of Southeast Louisiana, Southeast Missouri State University for a reason. I already knew it all. This is my passion, my career. But the thing is, he said, if you go back there, there's that most dangerous word in the English language. When Shatner pressed him, he said, "I believe it." And just as a little heads up for anybody who is new to the Horn, you will know that you should know that the word "believe" is the most dangerous word in the English language. Because with believing, you can make snakes talk. With believing, you can make sky gods come down and rape 14-year-old virgins. With believing, you can have fairies. Okay, so they're not so bad. That little scene in Peter Pan where Tinkerbell checks her butt. Yeah. I haven't been okay since the first time I saw the film. I think Agnes just got run out of the room. No, it's... How do you know these things? Well, it's my job to know these things. That doesn't explain how you know these things. Oh, it's my passion. That still doesn't explain how you know these things. Because the fact of the matter is, Flush Flimball doesn't, and important emphasis on the correct wordage here, know these things. He merely makes crap up as he goes along, which junkies are prone to do. So there's our first nominee for the evening. And a quick program note, just to let you know what's coming up here in a little bit. We will be talking this was a conversation we had scheduled from last week that had to be rescheduled this evening. We will be talking to Mark Carlin, editor of BuzzFlash, and Maya Shenwar, managing editor of truthout.org, here at the bottom of the hour, talking about their recent merger and where they see so-called liberal media going in the near to distant future. That will be coming along because Thunder took us down the other night. Thunder is not, you know, my crazed horse in the backyard in the corral. No, real Thunder. You got to remember, Verizon is the last leg or was until they sold us down the river to some fly-by-night 210 cans and a string outfit called Frontier. And guess what? The Frontier apparently doesn't handle Thunder very well. But anyway, that conversation will be coming your way. Now, of course, we don't have just one Moran nomination. Oh, hell no. No, we've got lots of Moran nominations. We could nominate the National Doctors Tea Party. Shall we? Shall we, nominating committee? Shall we nominate for Moran Monday the National Doctors Tea Party? They're a phony baloney, AstroTurf fake grassroots front group that had a protest in a park in San Diego this past Saturday. And they all wore white lab coats to show that they were doctors. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you can, in fact, rent white lab coats from linen supply houses. you know, industrial, and sometimes they have the little oval with the red embroidery and the white panel. It says Dr. Joe in the middle. Yeah, right over the pocket. And apparently that's what happened. They gathered in San Diego to protest Obamacare. They're protesting Obamacare. But it was just like the one they had in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, and another one, well, nobody showed up. They were supposed to be showing how all the doctors hate that Obamacare. Nobody came. According to Think Progress, one person at least told the San Diego Union Tribune and Moral Volcano and Battle Cry of Freedom that he borrowed a white lab coat for the protest. He borrowed one. Craig Brown donned a white lab coat and wore a stethoscope around his neck as U.S. Senate candidate Sharon Angle of Nevada spoke against the health care bill signed into law earlier this year. Brown said, "I'm against Obamacare. It doesn't achieve the goals of reduced health care spending, and because it will increase regulation and create more government agencies." Here's the other quote from the newspaper article that's especially precious. Brown said he borrowed the white coat from a nearby lab because a website suggested people wear lab coats to the event.
What, Edith?
You know, most states have laws against impersonating a physician. By the way, Sharon Angle, they swore she was there to take questions, but she ran away and hid. Sharon Angle ran away. No, bravely ran away, away. Oh, that's two singings. Oh, that's really a quarter. Oh, no. It would appear that representative staffers, and we're talking about the general membership of the event, staffers from the California GOP Senate nominee Carly Fiorina were also making up part of the total of folks there. After a while, they just, you know, they got enough for bridge, and because there were no real people there. So, yeah, I think it's safe to nominate the National Doctors Tea Party, which, in at least in San Diego, California, is surprisingly devoid of actual doctors. Yeah, that seems appropriate. But as we move toward the bottom of the hour and our conversation with Mark Carlin and Maya Shenwar, I really think that we have to put at the pole position none other than the devil's own daughter, Liz Cheney.
Well, you can't have the keys back. You don't know how to drive. You got us into the ditch in the first place.
President Obama on the campaign trail this week saying Republicans can't get back.
That, of course, that is right-wing tool Chris Wallace. But, no, we're nominating the devil's own daughter, Liz Cheney.
Driver's seat, and we're back now with our panel. And, Liz, we ran that clip just to get under your skin.
Thank you.
Why does it bug you so much?
Well, it's the combination. It's sort of a series of events here. You've got the president saying, you know, you can't have the keys back, like he's the decider.
Because we all know who the decider is.
When asked about what does it mean that 71% of the people in Missouri said they don't want any mandate for health insurance, he said, quote, it means nothing.
Hey, Liz, besides all the money, what else have you inherited from your father? Want some bacon?
Now, when you've got a White House that is that unwilling to listen to what the people out there are saying, I think that, you know, it causes some real concern about whether or not they're actually going to be responsive to the voters. But I think, frankly, it gives the voters a much bigger impetus come November to elect some folks who will listen to them.
Juan?
You know, I like George
Oh, never mind what Juan Williams says. He's utterly irrelevant. Isn't that precious? She's all upset at the Obama administration for ignoring an unconstitutional plebiscite in Missouri. What? Wait a minute. Her daddy was the king of ignoring what the people of the United States of America want. Screw them. I want to bomb some brown peoples and heap dead burnt bodies and veins in my teeth. I want to kill. I want to kill, kill, kill. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Who knew Arlo Guthrie ever met Dick Cheney? Yeah, the whole country turned on his stupid little Iraq war. Oh, well, what the American people think, that really doesn't matter. What are we talking about? Well, it was, goodness me. It was, I think back in 2008. It was March the 19th of 2008. Or somewhere thereabouts, when Richard B. Dick, five-deaf, big-time Dick Cheney before he Dicks you Cheney, appeared with Martha Raddatz. And she showed him polls from 2008 showing that Americans opposed the Iraq War. Martha Raddatz said, two-thirds of Americans say it's not worth fighting, Dick Cheney.
So?
So? You don't care what the American people think?
No. I think you cannot be blown off course by the fluctuations in the public opinion polls, and somebody get me a damn pint of B-negative right now. Thirsty. It's hard being up during the daylight. I have to wear the Ray-Bans like the Lost Boys.
Like he's the decider. Liz, sweetheart, ask your party. I think they would rather that nobody ever said decider ever again. Because it kind of reminds people of Dim Leader, who, by the way, has pushed back the publication of his own autobiography, written in several different shades of crayon, until after the November midterm elections, because even George Bush understands that the George Bush brand is flippin' toxic to his fellow Repiglicans. Oh, but you know what we have? We have another nominee. Sweet Jesus, we have another nominee. This is... You remember when I told you the story about Piyush Jindal and his hyper-Roman Catholic rolling on the floor, serpent-handling, strychnine-drinking ways, and how back in the day he helped participate in an exorcism? And they held the woman on the floor and screamed at the demons to come out of her. And I think it was probably mainly because she wouldn't intercourse him. And that proved that she was demon-possessed. Always does. Well, guess what? Apparently, Piyush Jindal is not the only moron. Who has that kind of checkered collegiate past. Here's a hint. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. You'll recall that he's a college dropout who somehow still managed to get into medical school at the same medical school that his daddy went to. Yes. Daddy went to Duke, and so Duke said, well, come on, Rand, come on in. Apparently, he had good enough MCAT scores, and he just dropped out of Baylor. Dropped out of undergraduate school, and right off to Duke. But not before he had some, shall we say, high old times down there as a Baylor battling Baptist. No, really, you know that, right? You know that like, for instance, Wake Forest is the Demon Deacons. Yeah, it's the Baylor Battling Baptists. No kidding. Really. Wish I was joking. Or are they the Bears? Battling Baptist Bears, perhaps? But no. There's a Rand Paul story out there. And somewhere along the way, I've got to talk to you a little bit about some of the fun stuff going on here in West Virginia. And just share with you a little bit of this literally earth-shattering, nationally important, not kidding, senatorial primary coming up on August the 28th between Joe Manchin, our present governor, and one of the most heroic men I have ever met in my life, Ken Heckler, former member of Congress, marched with Dr. The only member of Congress who marched with Dr. King at Selma. You know, that alone just makes me go, wow, was on a first-name basis and an advisor to Harry S. Truman. That's the choice we face on August the 28th here in West Virginia. And, God, I wish we were just a little bit bigger than we are, because we could really, really swing some effort and some muscle around to Ken Heckler, because he needs it. Because you may not realize it, but the minute that Joe Manchin enters the Senate, you, dear listener, wherever you are, whether you be in New York, New Jersey, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Arizona, California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, it don't matter. Hawaii, doesn't matter. Alaska, doesn't matter. No matter where you are in this nation, and arguably no matter where you are on this planet, seeing as how the United States uses 25% of the world's resources and has less than 5% of its population, no matter where you are on this planet, the minute that Joe Manchin enters the United States Senate, you, my dear friend, are... You know, I try not to use that word, but sometimes it's just so appropriate. But you, my dear friends, are screwed. And that's all there is to it. You're just screwed. So it would be nice if we could build the effort, I don't care, phone banking, whatever, to call every house in West Virginia. There aren't that many of us. There's only about 1.5 million people, so that's less than, you know, maybe 500,000 homes. My God, we could do that in a day, couldn't we? If we could just get out that kind of, because you know what? And I can imagine what the conversation. Well, why are you calling me? Why are you calling me from Kansas about a race in West Virginia? Because Joe Manchin wants to screw me. Because he does. Joe Manchin wants to screw you in favor of his pals in the coal industry. Isn't that reassuring? Having another corporatist, corporatist Politstitute in the Senate of the United States. Doesn't that just make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Yeah, me neither. I didn't think so. So we've got a conversation with Mark Carlin of BuzzFlash and Maya Shenmore coming up, and then we've got the rest of Moran Monday on the way. So stick around. This is Moran Monday on the Horn, and the Horn is America's listener-supported liberal voice. You know, there's a button over at headonradionetwork.com under the Contribute tab. There's also a snail mail address, a PayPal button, a snail mail address. We try to raise $2,500 every month just to keep the Horn on the air and pay the White Rose Society bill so that all of this can keep on happening. So if you can, it would be much appreciated if you would use that PayPal button and try to make this a less sweaty enterprise from one day to the next as we contemplate the existence of the Horn in September, now that August is already on top of us. So we'll be back with a conversation with Mark Carlin and Maya Shenmore. Joe Manchin, this is for you, a not-too-terribly-long-distance dedication right here on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You need. lost a lot of friends there, baby. I got no time to mess around. So if you only got to breathe, boy, baby.
Time to play some classic Van Halen. Oh, you know, you can just hear it playing from the Fairgrounds Amphitheater just down the row from the Midway here at Moran Monday on the Horn. We're gonna break away from the theme, our usual Monday theme, because we have a very serious and very intriguing conversation set to go just right now. I'm looking at blinking lights, and Agnes tells me we have our guests on the lines. I'm looking at two blinking lights in the phone system, and those two blinking lights represent Maya Shenoir of truthout.org and Mark Carlin of buzzflash.com. Those two entities and those two great liberal media personages have recently combined forces with a sort of a liberal media merger, if you will. Well, let me bring them both on. Of course, I told you a lot more about both of them in the run-up to the program, but let's get them on the line. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. How are you, Bob?
I'm well, thanks, Mark. Let's get Maya on. Maya, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Bob.
Hey, it's so nice to talk to you. We've never spoken before. Mark and I are old chums. But it's great to have you on the program, and great to have you both on the program at the same time to talk about this exciting, well, I don't know if merger is the right word, but this combination of forces and combination of strengths and determination. So thank you both for joining us. Maya, I'm almost 100% certain that everybody in the Horn family, the Horn audience, knows about Truth Out. But could you give us a little bit of the background on how Truth Out came to be, what it is, where it's going, that sort of thing?
Sure, sure. Truth Out has been around for about 9 years and kind of founded in the wake of the 2000 election, all that drama. And we're a nonprofit organization. We're an independent online news site. So we publish mostly investigative reporting, publish a lot of political commentary, and we tend to zero in on issues that the mainstream media isn't addressing. And we're able to do that because we're completely independent. We have no advertisements, no corporate sponsorship, and almost completely funded by our readership. So those are the people we answer to. And we are looking forward to growing and expanding and kind of becoming more of a force for the progressive movement and, you know, facilitating activism and facilitating just getting good information into the hands of people who are looking for it. And that actually, that goal brought us to our collaboration with BuzzFlash.
Well, it is an exciting collaboration, and just for your informational purposes, Mark already knows it, I don't know if you do, but I've got a very short list of places I go at the beginning of any given program, And Truth, for as long as this show has existed, which is in excess of 6 years, Truthout and Buzzflash have been two critical go-to sites for show prep for any given day. Let me ask you, Mark. You guys did a wonderful job and manifested some profound, as we've discussed before, some delightful snark among other things. Does that continue with your collaboration with Truthout?
I think that there's a real synergy there, and I think when Mayan and I talked about joining forces, it was important to look to the future, and there is a danger on the Internet that with all the progressive sites, as good as so many of them are, that we can become a Tower of Babel. The Republicans do such a nice job with single message points, and right down the line from Rush Limbaugh to think tanks to John Boehner or Mitch McConnell, they're all saying the same thing on the same day. Yesterday it was, if God can believe this, you know, repealing the 14th Amendment. And they were all on that message point, as bizarre as that message point was and is. So, yes, we think that some of the sarcasm that Buzzflash is, and basically I think our readers would describe it as a humorous take sometimes on very serious issues, which lightens the load and pain sometimes, that would continue on Truthout. But I feel very strongly that Truthout is a tremendous companion because it has great integrity. It has been a C3. It accepts no advertising, as Buzzflash never accepted advertising. And I think a lot of progressives don't quite understand that the advertising influences content or can. Right now we're seeing advertisements for BP, for instance, pop up on many progressive sites, and these are not takedowns.
Oh, I saw one of those, and it was, what in the world? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, to just sum it up, that Truthout is a site that I've always admired and has given great substance to readers with a very thoughtfully written articles from the progressive perspective. And so I think it's a very good collaboration. And I should mention, before I forget, that donations to Truthout are tax deductible.
Indeed, because it is a 501c3. Maya, when did Truthout start out as a 501c3?
In the very beginning, it was not, but that was always a goal. And actually, we became a 501c3 in early 2003, and the idea behind it has always been, you know, we feel like we need to make donations the primary basis of funding because we don't want to be accountable to larger interests, to kind of like, you know, we never want to get to the point where we're answering to a left-wing equivalent of Rupert Murdoch, if such a thing could ever exist.
Well, and indeed, you know? Absolutely, and indeed there's a certain, and you don't really have to explain yourself to the Horn family because listeners to the Horn know that we operate along the same lines. We are listener-supported with some partial support from a local grassroots organization dedicated to ending mountaintop removal in our time.
Mm-hmm.
So they are well versed in the importance of not being polluted by the corporate or the standard corporate line because of the issue I think even of self censorship. Once you understand that, you know, you're getting that check from Amalgamated Widget, you can't help but look twice at a story that's critical of Amalgamated Widget and then, you know, maybe shy away from it. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And I think there are some issues that even on MSNBC or, you know, outlets that are considered uniformly liberal or progressive, there are certain topics they don't touch. you know, because they do have corporate backing. And, for instance, labor rights, that's something that's almost entirely off limits all the time. And until recently, immigration was one of those issues, until there was this crazy bill to rally against, you know, but immigration on a day-to-day basic level affecting, you know, millions of people was never a kosher issue. So, you know, I feel like, especially as a unionized organization ourselves, Truth Out has a responsibility to cover those issues and to go beyond kind of the safe topics.
And that indeed you do. One of the things that the way it's worked synergistically for me over the years is I would go and call stories from BuzzFlash for the evening show, and then go to Truth Out and read, because you do your own reporting. I mean, you're not just aggregating, and I don't mean just, but you're not simply aggregating content, are you? These are people who actually write for Truth Out, correct?
Right. Mostly at this point, actually, we use original content. The majority of our material is original, and that's one of the reasons why BuzzFlash is such a great complement, because BuzzFlash is primarily scanning the news for the most important, most insightful articles that are available elsewhere in the media world. So, yeah, but primarily we focus in on investigative reporting and the type of commentary that's kind of forward-looking, that presents solutions, because that's something that you really don't get in most of the media, especially the corporate media is not big on innovating and, you know, daring to be idealist. So those are all things that we take very seriously.
Mark, when you did join forces, what kind of this should be, unless I'm sorely mistaken, this should be a real progressive juggernaut. I know you had literally tens of thousands of Twitter followers, and a lot, and your emails went out to tens of thousands of people every day. What kind of reach do you have now that you two, Truth Out and BuzzFlash, have joined forces?
I would defer to Maya on that. I think that you have, first of all, you have your email list. Then you have your statistics on how many people come to your site every day. And then there's a lot of secondary traffic that occurs when things go viral, as they say, because Truth Out and BuzzFlash both get emails where just readers start forwarding articles to their friends and include us on their list. So I think it's quite large. I think it's very important, and I think it's one of the reasons that I was attracted to Truth Out, is that Truth Out very much relies on emphasizing in its substantive content progressive values, not necessarily loyalty to a politician. And many of the progressive sites focus on the politics of the progressive movement. But politics are really only a way of enacting values, and I think that it's been very important that Truth Out, as a not-for-profit, has emphasized values. And Maya just said something, and I know you as a labor guy aren't going to pass that over. It's probably on your list of questions later. But last year, Truth Out became the first progressive website to move toward unionization. And I think that's a real fine example of how they incorporate progressive values, and they aren't just on the internet to make money or to gain a lot of attention on television, become pundits. They're there to advance progressive values, and that's something that obviously has been dear to the heart of BuzzFlash. And you might talk with Maya a bit more about the unionization, because I think a lot of us as progressives on the internet, and BuzzFlash has been guilty at times, we get caught up in this frenzy of what's happening in Washington and, you know, what's the fate of the latest bill. But being on the internet has sometimes replaced putting our values into action. And I think Truth Out unionizing is really putting their values into action, and they're the first progressive site to do that.
How did that come about, Maya?
Well, we unionized last summer, actually, which was prior to me becoming executive director, and I was actually part of the union organizing effort, which was a little strange when I was suddenly on the opposite side of the table. But at the time, we felt like, here we are. We're this progressive site. We cover labor rights. We cover individual labor issues and kind of chronicle the movement. And we need to walk the walk. And we need to start living our values and set an example. Because it's bizarre how, you know, there's this vast progressive blogosphere and many, many independent news sites. And we're really not only the first online-only progressive news site to unionize, we're the first online news site to unionize. So it's kind of an exceptional circumstance, and we were surprised when it happened ourselves. It took a lot of work, but we all voted last summer. We held the first virtual card check in the United States, which means that we scanned all our cards, we emailed them to the card check site, and then just a few people were on site counting the cards, verifying the cards, and conducting the verification process and then reporting back. So we're really hoping that this sets a precedent and shows other sites on the internet that this is something you can do and it's very feasible. And the digital age doesn't have to mean the end of unions.
Did you have to look around to find a union to join, or was there one that just naturally presented itself?
Well, actually, originally I contacted the Newspaper Guild, and I wasn't sure whether we exactly fit into that box, but there wasn't really any box that we fit into. So I contacted a union rep who I found through a friend. It's actually the St. Louis Newspaper Guild that we're part of, which is a little bizarre because no one at Truth Out lives in St. Louis. But this was the guy who was interested, and he was actually very excited about it because he felt like, look, newspapers are slowly fading and some of them are just crashing and burning, and the guild needs to look elsewhere to kind of build up its strength and get its numbers back. And so he saw this as an opportunity to kind of move into that sphere. So he was a big help in showing us how we could find our way through this process when it was really uncharted territory. And I'm hoping that not only does this set an example for other sites, it'll also set an example for the guild and other unions of how they can break into the online sphere and, you know, work their way into that territory.
Well, indeed. And, of course, one of the big selling points of union membership is the fact that it is a quality of life issue in many instances, because union membership conveys certain benefits. For your member writers, Maya, does this present an opera? Does this make their lives easier and better?
For the people on staff, now the people on staff are part of the union. The freelancers can't join our union, but they can join the freelancers union, and we encourage them to do so. The union definitely improves the quality of life for everyone who's involved, and I have to say that as a boss, having the union around has made me a better boss, even though I've always been very conscious of labor rights. Having the union around is kind of a daily reminder that no matter where we are budget-wise, and even if there are a million things on my checklist, I have to remember these certain priorities and be accountable. You know, We have very good working conditions at Truthout, fair wages, substantial vacation time. We encourage kind of just democracy in the workplace where everyone can express their concerns and everyone can contribute ideas at any level. And the other thing about having a union is that it brings certain benefits that we wouldn't have otherwise, things like publicity among union members, people who might not find Truthout otherwise, who might not be into, you know, reading news online. But because we're a union member, they find us through that channel, and they're exposed to all this information and these valuable ideas that they otherwise wouldn't be able to access. So I think that's another benefit just for the community at large.
Well, it certainly resonates with me, Maya, because we've been basically carrying water for labor from the very beginning of the program of this network, simply because the standards are clear that union membership is in fact a net positive for the workforce, the working people of this country who carry this country in fact on their backs. Mark, I take it that you are now a member?
I will be a member. I just actually started last week, so that.
Well, it is rather new, isn't it?
That is coming up, but I will be proud to be a member. I've been a union member before, and I always am proud of that. I think that you and I were in that wonderful, and we had a discussion, this that wonderful get-together in Pennsylvania when the progressives of Pennsylvania and all the unions got together in Harrisburg, perhaps 600 people there. And I think it was so optimistic, and it was such an uplifting event, a two-day event, that it made one think this is what it used to be like when progressives and populists and labor worked together, not on what is different or what presents conflict, but on values that they share. And so I think that the union element is very important. Unfortunately, the Democratic Party in the last 30 years, coinciding with the rise of Reaganism and still having its impact with the tax cuts for the wealthy and so forth, and the legacy being the collapse of our economy, labor needs to be brought back into the Democratic Party, or let's just say it needs to be part of the progressive and populist movement. There are too many common values, particularly economic justice, for it to collapse. If the unions continue to collapse, and they have been declining in membership, as we know, considerably, and also part of a mainstream media campaign that marginalizes unions, we will continue to lose the middle class way of life that made America so strong in the post-World War II years. So I think that what Truthout has done is extremely admirable because, as Maya pointed out, it's symbolic and it's real. I mean, it is a real unionization, and I think that we need more unions and more support for unions throughout the country, and less emphasis on Wall Street bonuses.
Maya, does union membership sort of point the way toward a better personally sustainable model for people who are out there writing and producing content on the internet? I ask because I recently learned I can't remember the exact numbers, but a shocking statistic that the vast majority of people out there working as bloggers, so to speak, who are producing brand new, independent content for people's use, the vast majority of them are underpaid, if paid at all. Do you think that this addresses a means for going forward and providing a meaningful living for folks like that?
Definitely, and that's a great point. I think one of the things that we had kind of at the forefront of our minds was this misconception that people working in virtual environments automatically have kind of a sweet gig. You know, they're working from home, often their hours are flexible, but really some of these people are working, you know, 12-hour days and being required very rigidly to work those hours, you know, because their bosses assume that they're, you know, addicted to the internet anyway, and they'd be in front of their computers no matter what. Another thing is definitely the wages, that a lot of these sites, even large sites, have staff, you know, people who are full-time employees and are not making a living wage because, you know, they're kind of convinced that their organizations are still in startup mode because internet-only sites have this kind of aura of being new and cutting edge, and that takes the place of kind of those traditional values that Mark mentioned, you know, paying workers properly, setting up a structure for, you know, working in a livable environment. And those have kind of fallen by the wayside in the internet age. And actually, a lot of sites don't have employees, as kind of we've come to understand employment. They just have, you know, a whole range of freelancers who are working for very low pay. And
isn't it
because they love it, but...
And what you're describing there, isn't that sort of a downward slippery slope back toward a sort of virtual sweatshop?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've never heard that exact phrase. It's a great one.
I think I just invented it.
Yeah, great job. But I think that that's exactly what it is. And it kind of, in a way, it echoes, you know, like telephone workers in India kind of just sitting at a desk for hours and hours and hours and not even feeling like they can speak up, you know, because they're made to feel like they're privileged to even be able to produce content that other people can see, you know, to publish at all. So, and I know a lot of the larger sites, even in the more independent sphere, who've taken on corporate sponsorship, those especially encourage all unpaid content just because it's a great business model. You know, there are a lot of smart people out there who will provide it, you know. So it kind of also encourages a certain class divide on the internet because the people who can afford to spend time producing unpaid content are naturally people, you know, who don't need to support 10 hungry children by themselves, you know? So
well, exactly.
That also is dangerous.
Without trying to get too autobiographical here, at one point in time in its early days, The Horn was producing as much live liberal content as Air America. And when Air America was going through $80,000 a day, we were running a network, as we still do to this day, doing nothing but paying the bills with all volunteer labor. And over time, people have to go out and find work and get a job, and that takes them away from being able to do the things we love to do. Let me ask both of you, and take it in whichever order you prefer, because both of you, by virtue of not taking commercial sponsorships or corporate advertising or whatever, both of you have had to deal with the world of alternative funding. And something that is frequently heard on our side of the divide, and that I have even said myself, is that the right wing is very generous with its monies because they have a greater understanding of the need to manage, especially on their side, because they are so thoroughly and frequently, almost consistently, in the wrong. They understand the need to control the message, whereas we in the liberal or progressive side of the debate go begging. Has that changed any, or is it getting better, or is there any hope on the horizon?
Maya?
Well, Is there hope? Yes, definitely. And we find it encouraging that even in this very rough economic climate, we still have many readers who continue to give what they can afford. You know, we have a lot of people signing up for $5 a month memberships, which is great. And, you know, giving at the level where they feel like they're making a commitment to the organization, no matter how much they can give. But at this point, you know, it is a struggle because people are giving less. And we have, I mean, what's funny about the union, like I mentioned, it's a great check on this idea that, okay, we have to stay within our budget, but at the same time, we have to prioritize working conditions and a living wage, which we've done. Mark and I both know the story of, you know, personal sacrifice in exchange for keeping the organization alive. So that's something that comes into play. You know, you have to have these values really at heart to be able to sustain the operation. You're not going to be making a Fox News salary. But at the same time, I think you make a really good point that we need to make progressives understand that the funding needs to come from them personally, because as long as we're going to resist advertisements, resist corporate sponsorships, we can't compete with corporate media unless everyone buys in, unless everyone who cares kind of takes a stake in these types of projects. The reason I say there's hope, besides the fact that, you know, we still have a strong donor base, is that it seems like for a while after the 2008 election, there was kind of this sense of listlessness and apathy among progressives, like, oh, there's nothing we can do, and why, you know, push this movement forward if it's not going anywhere, just because Obama was not and is not fulfilling expectations. But now we're seeing kind of the emergence of various disparate grassroots movements, and people are feeling like, okay, you know, in little ways, and maybe even in big ways, we can start making a difference. And a big part of that is changing and shifting the message and bringing the propaganda to light and calling it out. So I think that there has been a mind change to a certain extent.
Anything to add, Mark?
I think, first of all, that the readers and contributors to Truth Out in over 10 years to Buzzflash are to be commended. These are people, and I know Maya and others, Matt, who's the development director of Truth Out, have gotten these notes, and we got them time after time, particularly with checks of people who would say, I'm on Social Security, I can just afford $5 to donate, and I'm not going to buy something, a book this week or something. And they're very heart-wrenching in a way, but they're also very inspiring, because these are people on fixed incomes, elderly, or even people who have been laid off. Both of our sites don't charge a subscription, which is another thing, so they're open to anyone. And Truth Out is often noted when it's asked for donations that, you know, if you don't have the money, that's fine, keep reading, just tell your friends. So I think that it's a very different model, and the corporate model, unfortunately, and I was talking with another Truth Out editor over the weekend about this, and he was quite surprised because he went and checked on what I said, which was, as I've been looking the last few days, and I mentioned this earlier, there's all these BP ads popping up on a lot of progressive sites. And at first I thought they were like from the Yes Men, who are a parody group.
No, they're very real, aren't they?
Yeah, and if you click through, it would be some incredible parody about British Petroleum. But actually, the ones I saw, the latest round, there are different rounds, but the latest round clicks through to their BP Twitter site, their official Twitter site, which is all about how they're so being so responsible about the cleanup and so forth. And I think If you look at some sites, and a very large site I won't mention because I don't want to be critical of progressive sites.
Most of us can probably guess one out of
but
two
you'll
or three.
Read it about a specific subject, and within the story is an advertisement about the very subject that this story is exposing, that subject, that organization is paying for, that company. And I think that gives very mixed messages to people. People may think they're not affected by that, but they are. And the corporate context of the way the news is framed, as George Lakoff would say, is very much a part of the way we think and starts to give us the context for the way we think. And those sort of ads soften people up. They start to feel a little bit warmer toward Coke or BP. Shell has been all over the place. Like Frank Rich's column, the Sunday New York Times, just had Shell ads in it. That's all there were.
Yeah, and let's not forget about Clean Coal.
Clean Coal.
Yeah.
And you get even industries that don't sell to consumers, like Northrop Grumman or Boeing. Simply to make their image one that is more acceptable to the public. And it works on people. They wouldn't be doing it if it didn't work on them. But I wanted to bring up another issue that I think to sites such as Truthout Buzzflash now, /Buzzflash, is a real threat, which is what was announced today with Google and Verizon. It's kind of been in the news for a week now, but they officially announced, which is that they're basically going to be carrying the wireless internet, particularly to Verizon cell phones and iPhone-type products, the Droid that Google has. And what that is going to mean is kind of like buying a cable television package. You have to, you know, you can buy the basic package, you can buy the second level, the third level premium, fourth level premium, and theoretically, in the long term, many sites may suffer as a result because if you look at cable television, which was started, if we remember, as a free free of advertisements.
Yes.
Because you would pay for it, and they'd say, well, you don't get advertising. Well, then when they were wired and got all the contracts of different companies, they put in advertising. And then they limited the amount of public access. And so what we're seeing, this first step with Google and Verizon, has the potential to lead to a situation like cable television where the provider chooses what's in each package and limits the number of outlets on stations you can choose from.
Well, AT&T already limits bandwidth. It used to be that when you bought their data package, you bought an unlimited data package at like $30 a month, and now they've cut the price by $5 and limited it to 2 gigs of bandwidth.
Yes, and I think unless the FCC acts to, it's a very technical issue, so I don't want to get into it, but they can resolve this by classifying the internet is a common carrier, what is called a common carrier.
Yes.
Basically, that's the telecom industry. Right now, under the Reagan and the Bush administration, was classified as an information content carrier. And the Supreme Court said, well, if it's an information content carrier, it's not subject to the FCC, which oversees the telecom industry, but not magazines, for instance. But if it's classified as a common carrier, that's all the FCC has to do. And they can do it by a 3-2 vote because the new chairman was appointed by Obama. But he's, for some reason, has been mysteriously hesitant to do this. And if he doesn't do it, then the internet companies, which are basically the telecom industry now, are going to end net neutrality. And what you're going to see is this proliferation of the progressive beachhead on the internet really endangered.
Definitely. And, you know, what's ironic is that Google originally was this pretty tremendous advocate of net neutrality and prided itself on, you know, preserving access for all.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So what's their corporate motto? Don't be evil?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, but I guess that this type of mindset has been legitimized enough that Google feels comfortable making that move, which is scary. But one thing, actually, that I think that we can do in the meantime, where we're while we're waiting to see where this goes, is kind of exercise our means of viral distribution, looking at alternative ways to get the message out, and also just publicize our site and publicize the fact that this information is available. And one way that we're really building up is social media and looking at how we can use social media in positive ways. Because, of course, you know, Facebook is also a corporation. We can't, you know, completely exonerate it from evil doing. But, you know, we have found Facebook amazingly successful at directing traffic toward Truthout and generating kind of this new democratic forum for discussion. The discussions that happen on Facebook are often more lively and more fruitful than the discussions that happen in the comments section on Truthout. So we're looking for ways to kind of transform Facebook into an open space for democracy and a place where people can come and find out more about Truthout, find out more about the issues we cover. And we've seen a lot of success. Right now, I think we're past 36,000 fans, which is huge. And now it's just continuously increasing. So we're looking to that as an alternate means of publicizing our efforts, and hopefully that'll mitigate some of the effect once, you know, these crazy policies come into play.
Maya, you've mentioned, and I've kept you long anyway. I don't want to keep you much longer because I know you're probably busy. But let me ask this. You mentioned social media. How do you, since a great deal of what is out there is print oriented, how do you expand into the world of things like podcasting or video and such as that?
Well, we've been working slowly to incorporate media into our process and into our offerings. And it's kind of, you know, we have our core base of readers are kind of very print-oriented. A lot of them actually print out the articles instead of reading them on the screen. So there's been some resistance to video. But as we're bringing in a different crowd through Facebook and through Twitter, people are much more excited about the multimedia content and often will offer it through kind of like integrating it into an article, using a video or a podcast as an example to illustrate something that we're discussing in a piece. And we also offer videos through social media on Facebook and Twitter to draw people in. You know, there are people who don't like to read, and instead of just ignoring those people completely, or even
right, because it's kind of tough to read an article either online or in print when you're driving down the highway.
Sure, and you know, as people increasingly use mobile devices, they might choose to listen to Truthout instead of reading it. And hopefully, at some point, we'll make that possible. We've actually talked about a daily podcast, kind of reading the Truthout headlines and discussing each one briefly. And I think readers would be enthused. They've definitely been amenable to certain other changes like that. So we're looking forward to expanding that medium.
Well, you both paint a picture of a very intriguing future. going forward. And I hope you will stay in touch with the Horn, and let us know how things progress. If there's ever anything that we can do to help, please don't hesitate to give us a call, either you, Maya, or you, Mark. And by all means, if you'd like, I'll be happy to provide you a recording of this after the show ends this evening. And shucks, you can maybe take a little step at letting people hear Truth Out and Buzzflash there at the site if you'd like.
Absolutely. That sounds great.
All right. Well, Maya Shenware and Mark Carlin, thank you very kindly for going overtime with us here on the Horn. And I wish you, like I said, I wish you the best going forward. This is all very, very exciting.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bob. And, you know, best of luck for your continued work on the Horn. You've got the same spirit as Truth Out and Buzzflash, and your listeners do, just as our readers do. So let's move forward together.
I like that a lot, Mark. Take care. Bye now.
You too. Thanks.
Maya Shenware, Executive Director of Truth Out, and Mark Carlin, Buzzflash Editor. They have recently joined forces to go forward, and not just go forward, but go forward in an organized fashion, shall we say. That was really, really neat because, you know, there are many open questions about, and it's ongoing, about how we go about not so much managing the message, but just getting the message out. Because that statistic that's out there that says that there's 1,000 hours of right-wing hate for every hour of liberal radio, something has to counter that. Something absolutely has to counter that. And as one of the reasons I feel a special affinity for Truth Out and for Buzzflash is simply because, as Mark noted, we're all working sort of the same side of the street. Different media, but the same side of the street, because none of us wants to be compromised by the, you know, when there's the big toxic chemical spill at Acme Soap and Bubble, and they've been an advertiser with you for 15 years, and they've been, you know, they're putting your kid through college and stuff. It's going to be kind of hard to, say anything damning about Acme Soap and Bubble when they poison somebody's community. There's a very good and solid reason for being nonprofit and being being directed somewhere in a fashion away from every, you know, having to do the occasional buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold and buy a vacuum cleaner that can pick up a chunk of gold the size of a bowling ball and then drop it back on your Swedish mattress as you listen to your Bose Wave radio. You know, bullshit. Come on. So we will, having taken a little 45-minute break for sanity and decency, we will get back to the business of More and Monday on the Horn. We'll take a little bit of a break and then come back. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to the Horn. I'm Bob. Oh.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I was going to play the whole thing, didn't you? And don't think it's not a heartbreaking chore for me to fade that out. That's my favorite song. Just about. Very nearly. You know, you get really cool things happening in your headphones that you never really noticed before. When Donald Fagan says, respect the 7-second delay we use, there's just a little tiny bit of delay in his voice. God, that guy's a genius. But yeah, the Night Fly from Donald Fagan, from his classic seminal album by the same name, The Nightfly. You know, that conversation just has my mind whirling in a million different directions, because I start thinking about, you know, I start thinking about what, because the dream has always been to grow, to expand the horn. And I start thinking about all the volunteer hours that have gone into everything that is the horn. And the people who have come, and the people who have gone, and the people who have gone to the wayside. For reasons having nothing to do with the horn itself, but simply the desperate need to continue to eat and breathe. And that's the question that the liberal media has to answer. And that Buzz Flash and Truth Out, conjoining of talents, are beginning to answer. I think those discussions need to continue and go forward. But what I need to do right now is go to the phones. Lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333 on your nickel. And email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, so that was a good conversation.
I think so, and you know what? I'm really proud of him for organizing.
Yeah, no, I mean, at this point, it just seems like the power is in numbers. I mean, it seems like the internet is going to have to organize along the same way as the rest of us if all this stuff that's coming down the pike is true.
Absolutely, you know, especially the, you know, the Google Verizon thing that you and I talked about on Friday evening.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been announced. You saw that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break. I'm not understanding what's up with the FCC when they have the power to completely snatch this out from under, you know?
And, you know, without going, you know, there, that place that's so easy to go on any given program, it's difficult to see why, you know, what Mark Carlin was talking about, why they don't simply, you know, make the internet what it is, namely a common carrier.
Well, yeah, no, it's stunning, but, you know, like I said, I'm just really disturbed by this move, you know, and the whole hand-wringing about, you know, Google, and, I mean, please give me a break. I mean, Google is, you know, practically a front for the NSA from what I can garner, so this move, I'm not like...
Oh, you know, Sandra, that is so true. For instance, you know, Friday, and then I think it was in Wednesday's program, I did the great big high fructose corn syrup story, you might recall. And,
right.
And so... I get an email from a Horn listener, any one of the many, writing about high fructose corn syrup back to me. You know what it says across the top of my email? High fructose corn syrup myths debunked. Go to www.sweetsurprise.com. It literally said, in an email talking to me about how poisonous high fructose corn syrup is, Google, just by virtue of their algorithms and so forth, figured out that high fructose corn syrup was within the body of the email and decided, based on ad buys by the Corn Refiners Association, that I would be pleased to be directed to sweetsurprise.com.
Oh, yeah, no, you know, that thing, that business there, I mean, I'm forever exchanging really effed up emails with a friend of mine with the N-word and every other thing. You'd be amazed what kind of stuff I get in the, you know, when they're doing their adaptive advertising. Yeah, that's what it is. They sort of gear it all towards whatever the hell you're writing about. And you're sitting there thinking, oh, wow, I guess they know. You know, as I type Osama bin Laden 100 times. No, I'm joking. But you know what I'm saying? It's hella creepy.
Oh, yeah. And see, I guess maybe I'm a little bit different. When Mark was talking about, and I know exactly which websites he's talking about because I see them there, too. And in a couple of instances, I've written to people and said, hey, can you please do something about getting these ads off of there? I was writing about a clean coal ad because it just had me standing on my head.
Yeah, you got to let all that go.
Well, and I do, by screaming.
Yeah.
But I take an insurgent view, and, of course, this would make the people at Google very, very, very angry, and I frankly don't care. What I do is I click the damn things because I know I'm looking at evil in the first place, and I know that I'm costing those sorry bastards a few pennies by clicking. They may have paid as much as, you know, $5 for me to click that ad. So when I click it, I know they got to write the damn check.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, it's too true. But nevertheless, you know, it's really creepy, their little organization that they got. And, you know, while they were supporting the sort of net neutrality and the like, you know, you kind of just looked at it fish-eyed. But now that they've jumped the shark and they're just a completely brutal, pernicious corporation like you know they were, yuck, you know? It's just horrific because they're so huge, you know what I mean? And this whole idea that it was just, you know, a couple of, you know, grad students who got it all together, give me a break. I mean, the connections with the police state and the national security system is so overwhelming. With Google,
Did you see? And it's tangential to what we're talking about, but not too far afield. Did you see the New York Times story about Bradley Manning today?
I didn't get a chance to read that. I mean, I did see it, but I didn't get it. What are they talking about?
Well, the headline is "Early Struggles of Soldier Charged in Leak Case," Sandra.
And so, are they still trying to just run this man down? Is that the?
Oh yeah, this was a total hit.
Yeah.
It was a hit perpetrated by a New York Times writer by the name of Ginger Thompson. Marianne, sorry, can't see Ginger without thinking of Marianne.
Yikes.
But it's a total hit piece talking about how gay he is and how cranky he was and how he was a brilliant hacker, but that he'd get really mad because he was a liberal. I'm not kidding.
Oh. Wow, really? No, I have to go back and read that. No, I'm still reeling from that India article. It's funny that you sent that email to me. Because I had already read that, and I just thought, yeah, and you're wet the beak. You know, you're killing me with that, all right? That is.
Well, just the idea that people are starving in India and the unseen hand of the free market has sort of oozed across the planet, and now they're trying to figure out a way to get the free market to solve starvation problems. Isn't that kind of like asking the bus company or speeding taxi to cure the one-leggedness problem?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's an oxymoron at this point, and it's sort of, you know, the India thing. We've talked about it, and I just was shaking my head. That picture did me in, and the numbers, Bob. 500 million people.
Did that one grab you, too?
Oh, I was just like, you know, this is what I was saying before about the wonders of the democratic state of India, because there's some huge problems there, and the whole debate of whether or not food should be available. It's like, hello?
Whether food should be a human right.
No, it's just, you know, obviously not in that country. And for them to sort of, for the Congress Party, the huge party that supposedly appeals to the poor in India.
Yeah, India's answer to the Ba'ath Party.
Yeah, having this sort of internal debate to decide. It's like, wow. No, all I could do with that article was just go, wow, because...
Well, that number, Sandra, that number, there are more starving people in India by almost double than there are people in the United States.
Well, no, exactly, and it's sort of... I mean, that's why their country is, you know, is in huge distress, because I don't care how many call centers you have up in a mug. You know, they got to do something about their sub-Saharan African-like starvation numbers, man.
There was a story I saw over at Ken Ward's Coal Tattoo blog at WVGazette.com a couple of months back, talking about the new front opening in Pakistan. You have to say Pakistan now because the president says it that way. No, actually, it's because everybody says it that way except Pakistan. The army is trying to, you're so gonna love this, Sandra. The army is trying to reinvigorate the economy of the frontier provinces of Pakistan by opening coal mines.
Coal mines for and to provide work for the people?
Yeah, and there was another one of those delightful photos, the wire service photos, of this poor, skinny, pathetic human being filling a wicker basket with coal to carry it away and dump it somewhere else and come back and get another basket.
Wow.
Now, this is what Peabody Coal means when they say that they're going to improve quality of life by opening up mining in Mongolia.
Oh, no. God. Are you just making that up? Or
no.
Didn't the Mongolia already try grazing and completely destroy their country with that little...
Well, at least they got the grass off. Now it's easier to dig through to the damn coal.
Listen, I'm sorry. I don't even... You know why? I don't want to laugh. I can't help myself because this shit is so sick. That's outrageous, that one.
It all is. That's the, you know, that's the thing that just keeps slaughtering me. By the way, for folks who don't know, it's in the Asia-Pacific section of the New York Times today. India asks, should food be a right for the poor? Obviously, they didn't survey Rush Limbaugh on that one, did they, Sandra?
No.
But the debate is about The debate is about if they declare food to be a right, whether or not starving people should receive a 77-pound bag once a month that contains rice, sugar,
and some oil,
and kerosene.
Yeah.
You know, don't eat it all in one sitting.
No, I was just reeling at the sort of, you know, moneylenders, that word that popped up in every other sentence, and the sell your land, go in debt, and then, hey, boy, go work in the
Go to work in the call center, son.
And I know you don't work there. The call center is for the educated.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
No, you go and work in some sort of fake economic zone creation from hell that, you know, used to have land, now you don't. I mean, those stories were just incredible in that, when that one article. But the thing is, that has just been going on just chronically in India, you know, since they've embraced this neoliberal BS.
Yeah, I love this paragraph. The food system has existed for more than half a century and has become riddled with corruption and inefficiency. You know, because, well, efficiency is everything. Studies show that 70% of a roughly $12 billion budget is wasted, stolen, or absorbed by bureaucratic and transportation costs.
70%. I know. I was just like, good Lord.
And there's, you know, there's your beak wetting.
Well, no.
I mean, that's some of it, but apparently some of these free marketeers have decided that the beak is not wet enough.
Oh, no, they may want to, that's why they want to give, let's just talk about the real kicker in that article was the everyone will get a number BS. That really freaked me out. I'm like, oh, snap, you're going to give a billion people, each person is going to have a number in India. That's coming down the pike. So under the auspices, they can provide services now. With that number, that they're going to chisel in your forehead or something?
If you ask the fundamentalists, it will be on your forehead and on your palm of your hand or the back of your wrist. So I guess that means the Antichrist has started his work in India.
Well, the thing is though, it is really disturbing though because, you know, wouldn't you have to sort of present yourself? And you get your pound of rice, or you're going to get an EBT card like they do here, sponsored by, is it, which bank is controlling all the food stamps?
Oh, it's Citibank or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
But you know what I love best? At least for a time, because I remember reading a news story about it here in West Virginia, the EBT cards came along, and those are the credit card type-like devices that are used now instead of food stamps. The call centers, the quality control so-called customer service call centers, at least in West Virginia and I think Florida, were in India.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, speaking of the call center phenomena, I mean, the whole thing that's killing me now is the whole expansion of, you know, fresh out of law school call centers that are now being established in India. You know about this?
Huh? What?
Yes, there's 140 of them so far. Basically, they review contracts and do all the basic stuff that a recent graduate from one of our law schools would normally do when they got a job, right?
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. They grew like from 20 to 140 at the end of 2009, and it's sort of growing still. So... You know, all this outsourcing was okay when it was just, shitty manufacturing. But like with any Pandora's box.
It gets completely out of control.
Right. So the law thing, I was completely.
Like I've said before, I had three CT scans of the same region of my abdomen, which will someday result in cancer, most likely. We found that out. That was a real joy. But three CT scans of the same region of my abdomen, and only after the third one did the fellow who was reading CT scans in India on the Internet look down and go, well, bust my buttons, his innards are backwards. And that's the truth. Three CTs of the same place. to reveal a defect that I have literally had since birth. You know, and and somewhere along in here, Sandra, there's stuff that relates to immigration policy. You know, who needs H-1B visas when you can just keep him sitting there in squalor in some enterprise zone, as you mentioned, and get the work done there through the miracle of the Internet?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I was sort of thinking about this whole Verizon thing. I'm like, okay, so this is why the speeds are so slow in the U.S., because looky, they can now up that speed to provide for their...
Yeah, because it's not like more people are downloading more porn in America.
Oh, no. The capacity is there. And so it's all quite clear that if they kept the speeds down like they are, well, then when they start charging and two-tiering it or three-tiering it or multiple-tiering it, they'll all of a sudden unleash the speed that the Japanese and the English have today. But we'll be paying. That's the difference.
Right. Exactly. And from my standpoint, that means bad things.
Oh, no, all of it's really bad. I mean,
that means the horn goes away. If I've got to pay some sort of surcharge just to be available, not found, but just available.
Oh, no, you won't go away. It'll just be dial-up for us listeners. That's all that means. And for Democracy Now.
It'll take 6 days to download a three-hour show.
Right, exactly. Now... Okay, I don't mean to go total fatalistic on it, but it's just kind of like, it's almost a parody. If it wasn't so horrifying, it would be like a bad theater, this. Because what happened to net neutrality forever? What happened to that? Obama?
Well, didn't we, it's kind of like what Maya said in the conversation. Didn't we all just take a powder and breathe a huge sigh of relief when President Obama was elected and we knew that things were in the, you know, back in the capable hands and Dim Leader was back walking through the bluebells in the brush of Texas?
But you have a different name for him, which I've been using, and breaking up people. President Not Sure?
Yeah, President Not Sure, yes.
And I told somebody that the other day, was like, oh, dear God. But so President Not Sure is meeting up with the Super Bowl people from New Orleans, doing all sorts of different stuff. No comment on this horror show that's unfolding about the Internet, though.
No. And, you know, there are other examples out there, and there's a right-wing response that was kind of sick. But I'm still bothered by this speech that he made to the AF of LCIO. Did you catch that?
We're still trying to pass the...
No, this was talking about how... The best thing a coal miner could do would be to have a union. And it was one of those run naked around the room, tearing at my hair, and Agnes had to come in and shoot me in the neck with a Thorazine dart kind of thing. Because this is the same president who actively campaigned for the woman who told him to stick it up his tuchus, him and his card check employee free choice agreement, you know, Blanche Lincoln.
Right, yeah, no, because I'm a bit confused.
So he, you know, he showed her, by God, he showed her, he went down and campaigned for her.
I'm confused. So now he's making noises about unionization? It's getting close to that election, huh?
Yeah, I guess it's time to, well, you know, we're getting close to an election, so the right wing is trying to whip up the emotions of the anti-abortion crowd and the gun nuts, and the Democratic Party is going to go back and play their hoodoo game with labor and make them think that, we love you. We love you. We remember your, hey, I'll be damned, Bill, I remember your name now. How about that, Joe?
Well, I'm sure they're not appreciating, you know, all the faggots cheering in the street. They probably like, quiet, you know, they don't want that.
Oh, but that was another one. did you catch Robert Gibbs having to deal with that?
Well, I didn't. What happened?
The president remains committed to not being in favor of gay marriage.
That's right. No, I did catch that Obama is still against. I mean, he is going to be on the losing side big time with that line. It's like, dude, what's up? Yeah, no, that was incredible.
I support equal rights for everybody, but I don't support gay marriage.
Yeah, it's just like, what? You know, it's like, wait, what? Yeah,
Yeah, right. Go eat the shrimp. I mean,
God damn.
Yeah, CMT ran the Jimmy Buffett Gulf Shores concert, and I got to watch a little bit of it last night. And it was nice because there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people down at a place that I love dearly. And they were all, and they went absolutely, and I remember when it happened, but they went absolutely crazy when Jimmy sang Margaritaville toward the end of the concert and said, some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but we all know it's all BP's fault.
No, those people are stuck in an absolute hell from what I can tell. Because BP is about to pull up out of there as fast as you can imagine.
Yeah. Except now, you know, well, they've just moved on. Now they've gone from the active presence in the Gulf phase to the active internet presence phase because Mark Carlin was not kidding, Sandra. And if you, you know the usual suspects, you know where to go. It will not be any challenge whatsoever for you to see a BP ad just pop right up.
Unbelievable.
Oh, look, here's one now.
And the whole idea of them asking me to pay more, it just makes me feel sick. It makes me feel sick.
You know, another one of my go-to websites, because they have such great information, thinkprogress.org, which is a function of the Center for American Progress. Right next to a story, Ellison responds to Paul Lendy. He's so desperate to be president that he's willing to dishonor the Constitution. You know, there's Keith Ellison, the man that Glenn Beck said was an enemy of the state. And he's calling Tim Paul Lendy out and just embarrassing him the hell out of him. But you look, you know, the 20 pixels to the right of that awesome story, and in little yellow letters it says, advertisement. And there's that stupid green sunflower from BP. Gulf of Mexico oil spill response. When tragedy strikes, people need help without hassles. Click to read the latest. So let's click, Sandra. Oh, look, it took me to BP's sickening Twitter page.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. Twitter?
Yes.
Oh, God. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying about being some sort of bad parody. And that's what the Internet is going to become if the way it's going continues. It's just going to be some sort of joke.
Off to Florida. View live beach webcams, Twitter feeds, visitor photos, and beach condition updates. Gulf Islands National Seashore offers free weekend admission, encouraging folks to explore national parks. Looking for a BP claims office? See all 36 locations, plus mobile claims center stops.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, right. Listen, I thought that the Obamas, aren't they going down there to vacation for a couple of days before they go to Mars or wherever they're going? Right? You know?
Oh, you hurt me.
No. Anyway, it is. It's just sick. The whole situation is just an outrage, you know? Anyway, I'll let you go because at this point I'm
it's crazy making. And by the way, BP America wants you to know, Sandra, that the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station is one of three labs in the U.S. testing Gulf seafood for safety.
That's it. Goodbye. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's only fair. And we didn't even get to Tim Tebow's haircut. Sweet Jeebus. But no, I take it, and I'm going right back to the phones. And with a couple of lines open, jump in. You know, it's about 9 minutes before the hour. We've got about an hour's left of programming. Get in on the conversation for this Moran Monday. Oh, God, we haven't gotten to that story about Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. How about that? Are you solid enough? Do you already know enough facts? Not beliefs, not closely held impressions, but beliefs. Do you have enough of facts? Do you have enough of those that you can click these stupid ads and cost these dumb bastards more money? You know what? If I had the power, I would bring down this entire model. Go ahead. You go to Think Progress. You know, I know Maya and Mark didn't want to call him out. I'm looking at the damn thing. And somebody explain to me what a BP ad, what business it has on a reputable, rock-solid, decent website like Think Progress. Because remember the nature of the business model. It's only, they only get money if somebody clicks. So the only way that has any value is if you have the courage and the factual foundation to go ahead and click that godforsaken thing and, you know, cost them 50 cents or 75 cents or something that gets paid to Think Progress and then turn off the stupid link to the BP feed. Just exit out or whatever you have to do on an Apple. That, or maybe call some of these folks on this BS. You do great work. Why are you advertising for the enemy?
Well, you know, it's a Google ad and we don't have any control. Bull! You do have control. You can tell Google what you will and will not accept.
You know, I can't do a damn thing about the fact that my email has a pitch for SweetSurprise.com whenever I get an email about high fructose corn syrup. But Think Progress has control over what kind of advertising corporate filth shows up on their website. They absolutely do. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, gonzo freaking greetings, Bob. What's going on?
Hey, Spike, what's up, man? Happy Moran Monday to you.
Yeah, same to you. You know, I guess a couple things brought me out of the woodwork. One being the unnamed source story about Ayn Rand, which, by the way, definitely showing he is truly a libertarian then, if this is the case, because only a libertarian would perhaps kidnap someone to force them to do bong hits. And by the way, I wish someone would have forced me to do bong hits at some point. Somehow I did them all on my own devices. But
when I was being hazed as a fraternity pledge, they kidnapped me and made me do push-ups while screaming at me.
Yeah, well, you know...
Isn't that a pledge pin? You know...
The funny thing, though, that made me think, though, is that this very well could be all false, but it's kind of like those rape claims against Glenn Beck. When the person is certifiably nuts, then any crazy claim seems to hold water, even if there's no actual factual proof behind it. Because there's still people who believe that one about Beck because he's such a maniac and psychotic that, yeah, that sounds likely, even though there's no proof behind it. But in the same, you know, I didn't even think about it till today. Ayn Rand is running for, if I'm correct, Jim Bunn's seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a bad feeling Ayn Rand's going to win, because any state that thinks Jim Bunn was of sane mental state isn't going to see anything odd about Ayn Rand.
Yeah, he failed to bail out of the batter's box on just a few too many beanballs.
Yeah, I mean Rand Paul, by the way, but obviously his father, like...
I wasn't sure, but I don't think you misspoke. With 90% of these teabagging idiots, you know, they're not running for the office. Ayn Rand is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like... the
because they're all these nasty little clones.
Yeah, it's almost like the free market version of the Aryan Nation, the white supremacist crowd. You know, they're all running for Adolf Hitler. That's kind of the same admiration that a lot of these uber libertarians have for Ayn Rand. Unless I'm wrong, but I don't think I am there.
No.
A pretty accurate description of the crowd. And the teabaggers, maybe more Aryan Nation than anything else. Especially in some markets. But, and by the way, I missed the early part of the show with dinner and all, but the Rudolph Giuliani's daughter, Rudolph Giuliani, a child of a goon for a mobster and a mobster for an uncle, or grandfather, I forget what it was. It's, I know it's on the mother's side, and the father did goon work for a bookie going out, shaking him down. Kind of like what Rocky did for Mr. Gazzo in the first Rocky movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Rudy Giuliani's father did. No shock, his daughter goes out and robs $150 worth of cosmetics with $300 cash on her. Because if I don't know if you've ever seen Giuliani Time.
No.
The documentary all about Rudolph Giuliani's reign of New York City. Well, when the little comb-over Fuhrer was running New York City, first of all, he did everything he did to chase the poor people out. But second of all, there was a group that was created. It's almost like a SS to Rudy that got disbanded during the Bloomberg years. The Street Crimes Unit, they're the ones responsible for 41 shots in an unarmed man, for a plunger in someone's rectum.
Amadou Diallo.
Countless other brutality cases New York City had going for him. It was all the Street Crimes Unit, a kind of elite rogue unit that operated outside the rest of the police department. And I can tell you from experience, the city of Easton had a outfit like that. It was their SWAT team. And ultimately, one cop accidentally, quote-unquote, killed the other, although it would always be hard to tell because the Easton Police Department cleaned up the scene a little bit before the state police could come in and look it over. And they were a rogue group that operated on the outside of the boundaries of the rest of the department, and the rules didn't apply to them because I actually knew people who were not SWAT members of that police department who talked about being outsiders with those guys. And the matter of fact, the Eastern Police Department, they had a tattoo of a dagger. I think it had wings. I can't remember, though, but it written under it in German was Un für alles, which is one for all in German, which is a little puzzling when you have a group of all white police officers with a German militant tattoo.
Was there a black son as well, perhaps?
I don't remember black son, but they handled black guns, which are machine guns, and that's a story.
I got to go backward with you, Spike, because you just dropped me.
Okay.
Rudy Giuliani's granddaughter? Daughter.
Daughter. Oh, no, his child, a product of him. The great father of the family values he brings.
Got popped for boosting $150 worth of cosmetics, and she had $300 in her pocket.
Yeah, and then he came out.
Oh God, Spike! These little song parodies just hit me, and you just dropped one on my head like something about a like something out of a Warner Brothers cartoon. The anvil just landed on me because. You can kind of imagine Johnny Cash, but it's not. It's a woman's voice. And I stole some lip gloss in Macy's just to watch them cry.
Make sure you have a lisp, too, so that she sounds like a true Giuliani, like Daffy Duck, yeah. But
fortunately, I got the premium lip gloss.
The best part of all is then Giuliani came out and said, leave my family alone. You know, we need some privacy. Don't, we're going to. And so when he did that, New York, while there's a lot of right-wingers in New York, there's also a lot of liberals who hate Giuliani kicking around in New York these days still. And they quickly went back in time to when he was mayor and a young man was shot, I believe, again, by the Street Crimes Unit, which is why Giuliani was so feverishly trying to defend them since they were his SS, essentially. And it turns out he used a thing, oh, this kid has a long rap sheet as a juvenile, which you're not supposed to, look into someone's juvenile record when they're an adult. And he even said, oh, this kid wasn't an altar boy. And then, of course, his church came forward, his, I guess, pastor or priest, I don't know what denomination, said, actually, he was an altar boy at our church. It turns out that the things Giuliani tried to rationalize why it was okay the kid got killed by the police was he got in a dispute as, I think, a 13-year-old with a kid over 25 cents, and the police were called, and no one was arrested, and something else very minor. Neither time did he ever have to appear in court or anything like that. But Giuliani twisted it into, oh, the kid was future trouble, so we saved everyone by killing him. So
working that whole pre-crimes unit?
Yeah, so surprise, the other shoe dropped, and this time around it was his family who obviously are committing even worse crimes than, you know, kids he justified, or young adults he justified the snuffing of. But that's Rudolph Giuliani. And by the way, I would highly recommend Giuliani Time to anyone who could see it. And there's even footage of some of his goon squad at work at a jewelry store investigation when they come in, and they claim that the jewelry store had done some illegal transactions, and they didn't. Basically, there were some radical elements in his years of New York City within NYPD who might have been kind of shaking people down a little. Which, what does that remind you of, I might add? Who else shakes down business owners, and especially in places like New York? If I say forget about it, would that ring a bell to anyone out there listening? Do I have to say bada bing, bada boom? Just saying.
Bada bing, bada boom. Yeah. Give me a canola.
But by the way, you were also mentioning internet advertising, like BP at Think Progress and all that. They some though that cracked me up a little. Like there was someone else on that talkers list with you who's a liberal talk show host on the internet, and Cenk Uygur, and his show has a YouTube channel. And when I go on it, because I'm from Pennsylvania, a lot I get ads for the Toomey and for the Lou Barletta campaigns on that channel, which I think is hilarious, because if you click on it, then I guess that means their campaigns are giving money to a show.
Yeah, they have
that
to pay.
Talks about how they're insane. What's that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the part of the model that hasn't sorted itself yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, I suggest, A, either get them the hell off and put some content on there that liberals and progressives might be interested in, or, barring that, be insurgent and make the assholes pay, you know, the likes of Cenk, because you clicked on it and, well, they got to write the check for 50 cents.
Yeah, actually, I think that's the most brilliant move of all, because then you're funding people who are going to counteract what their lies.
I remember when the British band Chumbawamba sold one of their songs to Ford, and then used the money that they got from Ford to write songs about how awful Fords were, or something like that. You know, Chevron, BP, who knows.
I think it was about the combustion engine that uses gasoline, essentially, is what they used that money against. Something to that effect, like trying to push for more progressive alternatives to power in a vehicle. I think it had to do with gasoline specifically, though, like combustion engines that use gasoline.
But, you know, I mean, that is that model.
Right. Hey, all for it. I mean, hell, if I was a progressive running for office and the Republicans thought they were pulling a quick one by giving money to my campaign, I'd love it. First of all, that would show how much they're anything but fiscally conservative, being such wasteful spenders, advertising people who aren't going to buy what they're selling anyways. That's the best thing to do. Just take advantage of their sheer stupidity. But nothing tops. Get what Republican it was. It was about 8-9 years ago. It was in the early days of the internet, and he was running for office, and they wanted to. They felt that it was a close election, and wherever it was he was running, there was a larger than average number of Asians, and so he requested that they advertise in the most heavily visited Asian sites, which turned out to be all porn sites. Because if you do, like, just go on Google and do, like, Asian website, I mean, chances are the first 200 are going to be all porn-related or pretty close to it. So he was advertising the Family Values campaign on Asian porn sites. I can't remember who it was. It was somebody kind of closely tied to the Bush administration, too. I can't remember who the hell it was. But, yeah, the modern world eludes Republicans since they live in the 1700s.
Wow. Hey, Spike, it's good hearing from you. Anything cooking for you in the radio world?
No, nothing really cooking right now yet in radio. As you know better than anyone, it's a brutal business these days with more.
Yeah,
and more.
I think Mike Malloy said it best. It's a great job and a lousy business.
Yeah. So it's nothing's cooking right now, but hopefully down the road I can put something together, maybe at least do something online.
Cool, cool. Well, keep us apprised, Spike. Good to hear from you, brother.
All right, have a good one.
All right, take care. Bye now. 7.5 minutes past the top of the hour. We didn't break or anything, so let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
Well, hey, David, what's up?
I did want to talk about this. I'm sure you've caught the news of Wyclef running for president.
Yes, and Sean Penn is very nonplussed.
Yeah, Sean Penn is nonplussed, but, you know, the other candidate, which this is probably the most interesting race in politics this year for a number of reasons. Number one, both candidates are entertainers. I kid you not. They're both singers. From days gone back, Michel Martelly is actually a Haitian pop semi-superstar or whatever. He had a few hits. And so that's what also makes it interesting. It is completely a pop culture election.
Wow. Of course, how they're going to hold an election under the circumstances is anybody's guess. But you know, I was saying
there's actually a good interview for those people who want to check it out at All Hip Hop. If you go to the features section at allhiphop.com, and there's an interview with Michel Martelly. And what makes it even more interesting is the fact that Proswell, Wyclef's band member of the Fugees, is throwing his support behind Martelly. And what makes it even more interesting is the fact that Martelly and Wyclef have family relations together. Like
they're like distant cousins or something?
No, they're acquaintances. They when Wyclef was out there in Haiti, he actually showed his son-in-law, Martelly's son-in-law, to what New York was like, and so what's interesting about the interview, and it crosses the pop culture world. What was interesting is that Wyclef entered the race wrong because Martelly said that if he knew Wyclef was running, he would have supported Wyclef. So there you go. He just kneecapped himself just on that
Jesus.
Alone. He should have told Martelly that he was running.
Hey.
I think Sean Penn needs to take a step back because nobody else is applying for the position, and if Wyclef says he wants to try, by all means, let's have a fair election and see who wins. But I think it is a problem when you have two entertainers running for the spot and neither of them have any experience when it comes to politics.
Indeed, indeed.
And you know, I think the problem with this whole race in itself is the fact that Wyclef is such a polarizing figure for entertainment, and so many people when all his dirt is going to come out, and this guy is known in the business world is not the most generous person when it's concerning the music industry. He got to the position that he got to because I've talked about his management before, but one of the guys that he was involved with is a guy named Haitian Jack. And a lot of people in hip-hop are scared to talk about him because they think that he had something to do with the Tupac assassination.
And so, ew.
I know. And, look, Wyclef is going to have some... I mean, the biggest things, because he's had such a visible presence, I mean, there are so many things that he did that they could pull out if I was a strategist. Like, there was one where he went on Kathy Lee and Gifford in a chicken suit to promote a song called Cluck, Cluck, Cluck. I mean, they could pull that out. It's going to be an interesting race. And I think people – oh, he also did an interview with Wolf Blitzer that kind of touched on the problems with Haiti a bit, and he touched on some of the issues that people were having.
Oh, God, you just reminded me of something because I love The Onion so much. There's a video piece they did that folks should go out and see, David. Girl rescued, social workers rescue girl who was raised by Wolf Blitzer. Oh, my God. Oh, my. Wolf Blitzer will never be the same after having been skewered by the Onion.
Well, you know, Bob, you should check out the Wyclef and the Wolf Blitzer interview. And before I go, I wanted to get your reaction on the event of last week for pop culture, which was the unveiling of the new Kanye West Power. Did you get a chance?
Yeah,
to
look I watched.
What'd you think of it?
It's
crazy, huh?
Yeah, I'm still trying to de-white geek myself. But
yeah.
I can sit and listen to some hip hop and stuff, and God, you know, like you said, if you're going to say I'm back, that's the hell of a way to say it.
Yeah. And the other thing that was funny,
it wasn't like Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer video,
right?
But it had that sort of semi psychedelic, you know, with the little Baroque angels popping up in the corner and all of that stuff. It was wild.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that the director did not, this is so stupid, this is so Spinal Tap. The director would have agreed to do the video, unless you don't call it a video. It's a visual painting, and you couldn't do the whole song. So, because of the images that you were seeing were all motion cameras, so he would just take one frame after the other, and then he put a collage together. But the other interesting thing is that the big news is, of course, in the Twitter world, is that Kanye West joined Twitter. And he
immediately had 20 million followers, right?
No, he had 500,000 followers. But this is a funny thing. This is how unpredictable Kanye is. He's only following one person, and the one and he wrote him a line. He said, "I have chosen you. You are the one." And the guy does not appreciate that Kanye chose him. So it's this whole backlash, and he just wants it all to go away because then there's all this media blitz. You are the one that Kanye chose.
And see, this is another one of those little signs of the apocalypse, David.
I know, it is a sign of the apocalypse. And it dovetails right back to what I was saying about, the two entertainers, Martelli and Wyclef, running for the presidential bid of Haiti. It's insane times now. And I'm going to predict something to you, Bob. I'm going to predict that the next person, you're going to have a political outcome just like you are going to have in Haiti, where you have two opponents who do come from the celebrity side, probably of reality TV. Now think about that one for a second.
Followed by the announcement on August 28th that Glenn Beck is running for president.
Well, dictator, you mean?
Well, Dick.
Yeah, Dick.
God, anyways, that's enough to make me eat dirt and run rabbits.
But anyways, I just wanted to mention the Wyclef election and the Kanye West thing.
Absolutely.
So I'll just let you get to other callers.
All right, take care, David. Thanks for calling.
Later.
All right, bye now.
All right.
Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine, and that's two calls in a row that have referenced what for me, not necessarily for you. You're free to disagree. You know, this is liberal radio. You don't have to march lockstep.
And Megadiddos rush from busted knuckle.
This is the Moran Monday nomination period. I mean, I offer this as my nomination for the winner of the night. It is. Headline, GQ. Woman says Rand Paul kidnapped her in college, tried to force me to take bong hits. And as Spike noted a few minutes ago, that is the living proof that Rand Paul is a libertarian ophthalmologist. You kidnap somebody and make them take bong hits. This appears in 44, Politics and Policy in Obama's Washington, on the Washington Post website. The strangest episode of Paul's time at Baylor occurred... This is the quote from the magazine article. The strangest episode of Paul's time at Baylor occurred one afternoon in 1983 although memories about all of these events are understandably a bit hazy. So the date might be slightly off. When he and a nose brother, that's Big N, little O, big Z, little E, a fellow member of a secret society, the Nose Brotherhood, paid a visit to a female student who was one of Paul's teammates on the Baylor swim team. Wait a minute. He's named after Ayn Rand, for Christ's sakes. He can't have teammates. You can't have a team in anarcho-Randianism. It's all the glory of the selfish individual. Right? What's he doing on a team? Well, apparently there were other reasons. According to this woman who requested anonymity because of her current job as a clinical psychologist, really, that's why you request anonymity? You can't be known... Quote, he and Randy came to my house, they knocked on my door, and then they blindfolded me, tied me up, and put me in their car. They took me to their apartment and tried to force me to take bong hits. They'd been smoking pot. Close quote. After the woman refused to smoke with them, Paul and his friend put her back in their car and drove to the countryside outside of Waco. This is 1983. This is before all of that. The countryside outside of Waco, where they stopped near a creek.
They told me their god was Aqua Buddha, and that I needed to bow down and worship him.
Our god is... Wait a minute. It's both. Our god is Aqua Buddha. Here. Our god is Aqua Buddha, and you have to bow down and worship him. Me again. Well, bow down.
They blindfolded me and made me bow down to Aqua Buddha in the creek. I had to say, I worship you, Aqua Buddha. I worship you.
Oh, this is cool, man. God, this is some good shit. See the Aqua Buddha part again. Here. Oh, man, you got a safety pin or something we can use for a roach clip? Paper clip will do. What? I forgot my... I left my toque stone in the apartment.
I had to say, I worship you, Aqua Buddha. I worship you.
At Baylor, there were people actively going around trying to save you, and we had to go to chapel, so worshiping idols was a big no-no. Idols? A creek is an idol? I think that would fall more under the classical heading of animism, wouldn't it? I mean, isn't an idol like a statue or a box of bones or... Right? You know? You're kind of worshiping the spirit that inhabits the stream, right? God, what's his name, Conway in Kentucky? Does he have the stones to put up a couple of billboards saying, Aqua Buddha wants you to vote for Rand Paul?
Here.
With a big pot leaf? You know, because Rand Paul is opposed to legalizing marijuana. Jesus. So, that's my number one... Couple of guys in Speedos in Waco kidnap a girl at her apartment, blindfold her, and take her to force her to do bong hit.
Dude, blow one in her face. Like, no, get my... No, my toque stone is over there. Put a doobie in it and, like, shotgun up her nose, dude.
Someday I'm going to be a senator. This is going to be so funny when I vote against marijuana legislation. Oh, God. Here. Oh, dude. Oh, man, here comes the rush. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. I can't get... Oh, my limbs are flopping like the fins of an Aqua Buddha fish. I got an idea. Let's take her to the creek. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist and follower of Aqua Buddha. Jesus, it sounds more like he'd been drinking Aqua Velva. Long-distance dedication for you, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist and Aqua Buddha acolyte. This is for you from all of us at The Horn, America's liberal voice.
know he comes breathing through town. Bet your woman is up in bed with old Panama Red. The judge don't know when Red's in town. He keeps well hidden underground. Everybody's acting lazy, falling out or hanging round. My woman said, hey, Pedro, you're acting crazy like a clown. Nobody feels like working. Panama Red is back in town. Panama Red, Panama Red. It's you, your woman, then it'll rob your head. Panama Red, Panama Red. On his wife, old Mescalito, he comes to freeze it in town. Bet your woman is up in bed with old Panama Red. Everybody's looking out for him because they know Red satisfies. Little girls like to listen to him sing, tell sweet lies. But when things get too confusing, honey, we're better off in bed. I'll be searching all the joints in town for Panama Red. Panama Red, Panama Red. If you're your woman, then it'll rob your head. Panama Red, Panama Red. On his white horse, Mescalito, he comes to squeeze it through town. Bet your woman is up in bed with old Panama Red. Panama Red, Panama Red. If you're your woman, then it'll rob your head. Panama Red, Panama Red. On his white horse, Mescalito, he comes to squeeze it through town. Bet your woman.
Four and a half minutes past the hour. That's going out to you, libertarian ophthalmologist and anarcho-randian free marketeer Rand Paul. Yeah, this is all said, the great swimsuit bong hit kidnapping Aqua Buddha escape was said to have all taken place in 1983. I actually still remember 1983. I put that on a brain cell that I have not subsequently killed. I remember 1983. That was the summer I was on the archaeological dig. And one of the hardcore professional diggers had brought his entire vinyl collection, and it sat in the rec room of the area where we who were digging on the site lived that summer. Little portable stereo. Portable is a damn record player, but you know. And that was the first time I ever heard the New Riders of the Purple Sage singing Panama Red. It was the summer I got introduced to John Prine, Quicksilver Messenger Service, The Grateful Dead. You can guess that, who knew that me and Rand Paul had something in common? Yeah, that whole idea about steal your woman. Man, that's some inspired disc jockey. Tell me you can get any of that with right-wing radio. 25 past the hour. The phone lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on 304-658-3333 on your nickel, and we go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Dave in Humboldt. It's
hey, what's up, Dave?
Well, with the help of a couple of your listeners, I have been able now to be listening to your show and to visit the chat, and so I thank you for all of that. One of the things recently I have been asked by the Veterans for Peace, which I'm an active member here, if I would draft a letter to the editor. And it is their feeling, mine, yours I'm sure too, that our military is often on the wrong side of various conflicts in the world.
And history and social thought and, yeah,
right. Right, and that a lot of our servicemen, believing they're doing the right thing, are acting on the fact that they are being lied to and lied to badly. And some of them figure it out, and one, now the name is going to escape me, but one young man, I think he's only a PFC, has spoken out in opposition to what's being expected of him, and as a result of that, he's now being court-martialed for doing so, that he's supposed to keep his mouth shut, salute, and do what he's told to do. And I guess that's kind of the thinking of the military has been. But
no, that's generally how they function.
Yeah. Yet it's our feeling as vets for peace that we have to be able to stand up and speak our mind when we feel that our service is in the wrong. You know, we may not be right, but we should be able to at least express our view, and they should be able to respond to it. And so they've asked if I would help draft a letter that would go out to various newspapers from the Vets for Peace indicating our position on it, that we do believe that each soldier has the right, and maybe as Donovan once had put it, you know, the obligation to think for themselves and to act on their best thinking. And, you know, not you just don't, if they holler left flank, you don't just say, I don't think I want to make a left flank. It's got to be something where you thought out the ideology of what's going on and that if you are in the right war, serving the right purpose. And I think a lot of our American servicemen came to question that very much in Vietnam. Were we there for a legitimate reason? And to this day, I would ask, did we have a legitimate purpose for being there? And I ask it now again, Iraq, Afghanistan, and we're going to try to expand that throughout the Middle East, I think. Do we have any legitimate reason to be there? And if not, do we not have a burden to speak out and say what we're thinking on it? So if you have any thoughts for us, or if any of your people do, I'm on the chat room, and I will be more than happy to input any good thoughts that anybody might have for me on this. Do you feel that a soldier should just simply salute and obey orders, or does he have an idea?
Well, you know, that raises the whole question of what does the, you know, they've got Bradley Manning in solitary confinement on a so-called suicide watch.
This is the PSD that I'm talking about.
Yeah. It raises a question. You know, it's like I pointed out with the Pentagon's little snit the last week where they said, we are telling WikiLeaks to give back the property that they stole. Bring me back my bicycle. The only thing is, you can't generate any legal ownership out of an illegal act. You know, if the tree is poison, the fruit that falls from it is poison as well, Dave.
Yeah. All right.
And so, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, all this business, well, he jeopardized national security, and some right-wingers called for him to be executed, some such BS as that. You know, the fact of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned, Bradley Manning is a hero.
You know,
because and I've never been in the military, so I don't know where along the way in the 6 weeks of boot camp they give you your Nuremberg lecture. I don't know if it's after you've been on a 40-mile hike, or after you've just, you know, been half drowned in the Navy or some such as that. And then they say, oh, by the way, according to the rules of Nuremberg, you don't have to obey illegal orders. As far as I'm concerned, Bradley Manning being told that evidence of criminal conduct, being told that was classified and it couldn't be disseminated, was an illegal order.
Well, I've seen it and I've heard it, and that is that our leaders, government leaders, certainly it was true throughout the Bush era, their message to the soldier was, always remember, we are not here as aggressors. We are here as defenders of our country. Our country was attacked by these people. They want to give the soldiers to believe that the towers in 9-1-1 came down as a direct result of this Iraq-Afghanistan terrorist thing. I use that word a lot. And reality, as we look it up, that had nothing to do. They had no part whatsoever in the 9-1-1 event. So the soldier's being lied to. Now, if he figures that out, if he comes to grips with that, what does he do? What does he do?
Right, and then the New York Times does hit pieces on him. I mean, this was absolutely sickening, this business. He would get upset, slam books on the desk if people wouldn't listen to him or understand his point of view, said Shara Moore, who attended elementary and junior high school with him. He would get really mad, and the teacher would say, okay, Bradley, get out. And then there's the story of how he, you know, how he was shattered by his parents' divorce, and he was moved over to Wales, and then he was moved back to Oklahoma. And you know, along the way, he was targeted and tormented for his sexuality. And then he met a drag queen. And the drag queen introduced him to all of these evil computer hackers and other drag queens and other homosexuals. And the next thing you know, he's out there giving away our state secrets because he's gay, and that's an argument against don't ask, don't tell, or for keeping it. You know, you read the story, Dave, and you can see seven different right-wing talking points just spinning away like little galaxies spinning out, or, you know, the little galaxies spinning out of some sort of, big bang.
Well, I think they're going to do everything they can to discredit him, to make him look bad, to make him look like he's wrong.
I'd be surprised if he hasn't been tortured.
Well, if they've got him in isolation in the prison.
Yeah, what they're doing, this suicide watch, what they're actually doing, Dave, is they're shattering his mind. Do you remember what a couple of years in solitary did to, who was that? The idiotic yahoo from Chicago or wherever, the Jose Leon Padilla. Remember him? They kept him in solitary confinement at the Navy brig in Charleston, South Carolina, and after 2 years, he just couldn't make the voices stop, and he couldn't participate in his own defense. And he was convinced that his own lawyer was, flying black helicopters around his head. You know, that's what things like solitary confinement will do to you. You know, anybody who's ever seen Cool Hand Luke knows, you know, because Paul Newman was a method actor and everything. Solitary kills your mind.
And I think that is the purpose. I think the bureaucracy, certainly the military, wants to get the message out that you will play ball the way we tell you to. You'll do the push-ups and the turns as we tell you, and do not question. And if you question, keep your mouth shut. And if you speak out, we'll do everything we can to discredit you, and I think that's the message they would like to get out to the rest of the military. But those that believe that they're there doing the right thing, they've been lied to. Why too badly? Now, they may or may not figure it out. If they do, then where do they go? What do they do? What choice do they make? Anyway, that's
and what a choice, and what choices they must be.
Yeah, well,
you know, given the way I feel about our stupid little illegal war in Afghanistan, I personally think that Bradley Manning has probably qualified himself, and history will view him as having qualified himself for the Congressional Medal of Honor. But then again, we should have given one of those to Daniel Ellsberg, too.
Yeah. Yep. Whatever happened with our young Hawaiian lieutenant, that got him so bad.
I haven't seen an update in a while. Yeah, he's another one for that list.
I think they may have backed off. Maybe some. Just shut up and go away, don't ask, don't tell kind of a thing. I don't know.
You know, maybe that's what we as a civilian population who oppose war should do. We should come up with a really flowery medal and an awards committee and have a big, you know, grand event and hand out medals, some sort of Medal of Freedom or Medal of Democracy or something like that to people, Dave, who actually try to live their orders and uphold the Constitution and refuse to obey illegal orders.
Yes, do what is possible to try to promote peace and justice in the world. If they can do that, there should be a congressional medal awarded for that very purpose. I don't see it happening, but it's a nice idea.
I know.
But I'm going to be listening, and I'm going to be reading, and if there's anybody that's got a thought on what they would like to get expressed in a letter, I'm going to try to include it, because there's a few of us on a committee that's going to try to get it out.
Well, that's good work, David. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you.
Good, always a pleasure to listen to you too, Bob. You bring a sane, sound message. I wish you were on every kind of a hookup where a lot more than us could be listening to you.
Well, but all we can do is fire it up every night and hope that another listener comes along.
Oh yeah, we recruit a few. Okay, thank you so much.
All right, take care, Dave.
Bye bye.
Bye now. Dave calling from Humboldt County, California. 24 minutes before the hour. A little bit of time left for you to get in your thoughts, if you are so inclined. God, this is, it's so funny. A couple of minutes ago, I got, Marty emailed me this story about the BP oil disaster whistleblower being found dead of a heart attack drowning in his hot tub in Maine, which is just a, wow, crazed, I mean... So how does Google respond? How do the Google algorithms respond? Well, they suggest to me that I might want to go to learn more about how BP is cleaning up the spill. I'm sure that that would have taken me to the BP Twitter site as well, where the Connecticut Fish and Game Commission is one of three labs testing the safety and consumability of Gulf seafood. Jesus. A little bit frustrated, just a little bit. But no, just to roll things out toward the end of the evening. You know, we are in, as Sandra noted in her call, the first call of the evening, all this net neutrality stuff and this little separate piece that Verizon has struck with Google. We're in trouble. And it goes beyond that, because all of this social media that folks have been trying to figure out how to use and how to maximize the message, once again, we find ourselves so far behind the curve generally that we think we're on straight road. Now, here at the Horn, we're out in front of the curve, and it is straight road. Further proof of that, perhaps in a minute or so. But have you been following this story about, and I know it probably seems inane to some, but I know to others it is vitally important because it's part of the heart and soul of their work. Have you seen the developing, and the folks at Alternate get the credit for breaking this story about, what is it, Big? Yeah. Matt Osborne would be very, very good to talk about this topic because he's one of those people that was a recipient of some of the right-wing orchestration. Let's call it what it was, the right-wing conspiracy to drive liberal progressive content away from visibility on Dig. And, you know, Dig was important because it was social media that allowed people to push stories up, and there literally was a vast right-wing conspiracy to drive away anything in the way of liberal or progressive thought. And for me, you know, that's further proof that the right wing knows that it cannot compete on a level playing field. The right wing is so afraid. I mean, this is Stalin-esque. This is Pol Pot stuff. When your ideology is so weak, when your ideology is so poor, when your ideology is so bereft of anything smacking of honor or decency, that it cannot compete on a level playing field with other ideas, you know, as a political or social philosophy, whatever it is you're adhering to, is pretty well dead. And the coroner's death certificate is manifested in the inability of the right wing to deal with liberal issues head-to-head, head-on, if you will. And their subsequent concerted effort to quash, to drive down, drive away from the marketplace of ideas, anything smacking of liberal or progressive or what I like to call rational thought. You know, wow. It just blows me away. And guess what? Apparently, not happy to do it just at Digg. They're doing it at Twitter, too. You know, I don't have that many followers on Twitter. You know, you're welcome to sign up and follow. I have some interesting things to say. I tweeted a couple of things this morning about those articles I read in the New York Times. And they show up on my Facebook page, that kind of thing. But the confession that is manifested in the Digg story of the confession that they cannot compete is amazing. The confession that they do not wish to compete, that they wish to merely exist in a megaphone where you, citizen, hear and obey. You know, what a giant screaming, howling manifestation of the echo chamber nature and the authoritarian nature of right-wing politics. You don't think about issues, you hear them and you repeat them. Why do you think they had to found their own damned news network? You know, Radio Rwanda. Fox News. Remember, it's a brand name, not a description. They had to do that because they cannot compete. Not because, you know, our side, like CNN is our side, or anybody won't let them. Remember, Phil Donahue was driven off of MSNBC because he wasn't being sufficiently obsequious to the masters of war and the drinkers of blood when they were starting the Iraq invasion back under Dim Leader in 2003. But when I look, you know, when I look at the fact that it's the 9th of August, and at least in theory, we should be at about, you know, $750, $800 in our monthly fundraising, and we've barely crossed the $400 mark. I understand that it is unlikely that we're going to be able to battle back. You know what I mean? Those 1,000 hours that exist of right-wing hate for every hour of anybody doing liberal talk. I don't want to give up. I want to have hope. But Jesus, Jesus, what an uphill climb. What an uphill climb. And yet here we are, literally, way the hell out in front of the curve. Paul Krugman is a Nobel Prize award-winning genius. And yesterday published an op-ed piece at the New York Times called America Goes Dark. Ever since Sandra mentioned it, I've been kind of following and you know, damn! Listen to this. Listen to this. This is a Horn broadcast from 6 months ago. The lights are going out all over America. Literally. Colorado Springs has made headlines with its desperate attempt to save money by turning off a third of its streetlights, but similar things are either happening or being contemplated across the nation from Philadelphia to Fresno. Meanwhile, a country that once amazed the world with its visionary investments in transportation from the Erie Canal to the interstate highway system is now in the process of unpaving itself. Unpaving itself. here in West Virginia, adding this in with Paul Krugman over here, here in West Virginia, for well over 10 years, we've had something that were called orphan roads. Granted, billions of dollars roll out of West Virginia or barge out along our mighty rivers. Billions of dollars in the form of coal leave this state and leave us with little or nothing. And those coal trucks roll over our roads, destroy our pavement, and the barges befoul our streams, and the places where they get the coal in the first place, poison streams, bury streams, destroy streams, eliminate wildlife, cause clusters of cancer, and manifest sickness and death like unto verily, an Old Testament biblical plague upon Pharaoh. On simple working hillbillies instead, though. Because this ain't the hand of God, it's the hand of big coal. Do all that, and our roads are destroyed, and our infrastructure is crumbling. But Paul Krugman says, a country that once amazed the world with its visionary investments in transportation from the Erie Canal to the interstate highway system is now in the process of unpaving itself. In a number of states, local governments are breaking up roads they can no longer afford to maintain and returning them to gravel. And a nation that once prized education, that was among the first to provide basic schooling to all its children, is now cutting back. Teachers are being laid off. Programs are being canceled. In Hawaii, the school year itself is being drastically shortened, and all signs point to even more cuts ahead. We're told that we have no choice, that basic government functions, essential services that have been provided for generations, are no longer affordable. And it's true that state and local governments hit hard by the recession are cash-strapped, but they wouldn't be quite as cash-strapped if their politicians were willing to consider at least some tax increases. And the federal government, which can sell inflation-protected long-term bonds at an interest rate of only 1.04%, isn't cash-strapped at all. It could and should be offering aid to local governments to protect the future of our infrastructure and our children. But Washington is providing only a trickle of help, and even that, grudgingly. We must place priority on reducing the deficit, say Republicans and centrist Democrats, which means they're Dinos, Democrats in name only. I'm adding that. Paul Krugman didn't say it. And then virtually in the next breath, they declare that we must preserve tax cuts for the very affluent at a budget cost of $700 billion over the next decade. In effect, a large part of our political class is showing its priorities, given the choice between asking the richest 2% or so of Americans to go back to paying the tax rates they paid during the Clinton-era boom, let alone the Reagan era, that's me, or allowing the nation's foundations to crumble, literally in the case of roads, figuratively in the case of education. They're choosing the latter. They're choosing to let the country crumble. He says that eloquently, and he says it presciently. But if you've been listening to the horn for a few months, we were saying it all a long time ago. Because the signs are there. The signs are there. For those who have the ability to read them. What's it say in the book? Let him who has eyes to see, let him see, and him who has ears to hear, let him hear. Corollary to that is the idea that there are none so blind as those who will not see. And we have a political class in Washington, D.C., with its eyes closed and its fingers in its ears screaming, la, 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 can't hear you, not listening, not listening, to an entire nation of aching citizens. And yet we're here every night because you want us to be here. Not just me behind the microphone, but everything that takes to keep all of this going. And it is a struggle for you, I know. I get the emails. I get the notes when $5 come in, when $10 come in. I get the notes. I get it. I know. But I also know what our download rates are, and I know what our listenership is. And I know that for those thousands, the work is being done and the effort is being made by probably less than 50 people. And that is the challenge we face. Not we, the horn, we, all of us. If you want programming that is not polluted by ads for Preparation H or Buy Gold Now or bowling balls or Swedish mattresses, then it falls to us to make it happen. It's that simple. Lucky for you, we will not be on the air rather than advertising for Preparation H or Buy Gold Now. A, because they're not interested in advertising with us, and B, because I would go off the air before I advertised for them. I think I am safe in saying, and I will defer to John Fox, our webmaster, web designer, my colleague here at the Horn, about web advertising, but I think it is safe to say you will never see an ad for godforsaken BP on the Horn website. Because you know what? If that's what it takes for us to do with, we'll do without. And when I say do without, it means a lot of things. It means not being able to go to video. I played Video Killed the Radio Star a little bit ago. Because it's true. Eventually, this show and this network will be left behind in video's dust. Because we couldn't make the transition. It's kind of like the beautiful silent movie actress who couldn't make the cut to video because she thought of this. Beautiful, but had a voice made for silent movies. Video is coming. Video is getting bigger. Video is overtaking. We can't do it. It takes lights. It takes cameras. It takes pieces of equipment that cost $1,000. It takes human effort and human time to edit videos. Do you know how long it takes Matt Osborne to do one of those brilliant videos he puts together? It takes him upwards of 24 hours to do 9 minutes. Because he's that committed to quality and he is that committed to getting it right. Yeah, John telling me the only ads are for .orgs in our Google ads, and they're only on our players, Red Cross and so forth. That's how we went about avoiding plugging Anthrax Coulter. Ethics and morality do have a financial cost, and it's only fair to mention it. So a few minutes left in the program. Let's go to the phones and see what's up. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
Well, remember that line from Sunset Boulevard by Norman Desmond?
I'm ready for my close-up.
No.
No, okay.
Oh, they're not ready for a close-up, I can tell you that. Nor will they be prepared, Mr. DeMille, in 14 days. But she said the pictures are the ones that got spawned, not her.
Right, exactly.
And also, remember the report card that I furnished you a couple months ago?
Yes, I do.
About the American infrastructure?
And that's what I mean. You know, you provide that kind of information, other callers, other people email Jim, and we are out in front of the curve. But, you know, it was on the pages of the New York Times this morning, and I would say roughly 60% of the people who read it went, damn, it's that bad? And the other 40% went, communist.
And, of course, you know, as far as education is concerned, no child left behind. That certainly has some interesting tenets to it, does it not?
Oh, it certainly does. And the fact, you know, teachers are being laid off.
Well, I did hear today on CNN that they were going to pump in $28 billion this year for teachers so they wouldn't be laid off.
Yeah, and but you know what that came at the cost of, Jim? Because when we're talking about children's education and desperately needed monies to keep government running, we have to balance the budget as we go. You know, those questions aren't asked of nasty little adventures in places like Afghanistan. But in order to get those monies to the teachers and the states and county governments and so forth, we cut food stamps.
Well, you know, I have never subscribed to the thing that government can be run like a business. It simply can't be.
No, and the other side wants to run it like a business because, they can get away with plundering a business, Jim, but they cannot get away with plundering a government because there's supposedly laws in effect.
Well, what they want to do is to simply balance the budget, quote, balance the budget, quote, on the backs of...
hungry people. I mean, they cut food stamps, Jim.
Well, not only that, not only poor people, but also... the people who are the conduit for those programs. Federal employees. I mean, I began to feel this back in the early 80s. I mean, it seems like every time that they would start crying out about budgetary constraints, they would target the federal workforce. And to think that they could balance the budget on the backs of 2.5 million people who keep the country going. And who supply the conduit by which programs which are designed to ameliorate conditions for the poor, the disenfranchised, the working people, are going to be cut back and let go. They have no sympathy for people who are in public service or those people who benefit by public service programs, whether it's food stamps or whether it's Medicare or anything else like that.
Indeed. Jim, we're going to round it out with that. I thank you for your thoughts, my friend.
All right, good night.
All right, bye now. That's Jim calling from not too awfully far away. And if you're, I'm sorry for, see, you guys do this. You light up the lines. I got four blinking lights here. You light up the lines. With 10 minutes left to go in the show. Darn it. Well, we'll have a go at it tomorrow night, perhaps. Thanks to everybody who makes this show go. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, host of All Foxed Up, as soon as we find a happy place for that show to live. And that's a function of John's very busy schedule. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who literally saved progressive liberal radio on the internet with White Rose Society. We have added his fundraising total to our fundraising total to try to make it easier for Ben to keep all of this going. We try to raise $2,500 a month. Thus far, 9 days in, we've barely, as I said, barely hit 400 if we have. My math might be off. So there you have it. But thanks to Ben. Thanks to Lottie, our moderator in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, is our Southeast correspondent, and as noted, he's also a brilliant video producer. Thanks to our cavalcade of crazy op-ed columnists, Reverbo. I have reason to believe that there will be an installment of Cavalcade of Crazy coming soon to headonradionetwork.com, and it's a Lulu. My head writer is David in Tennessee. The offer remains open. If you would like to send an email of good wishes to Judy Bonds as she fights the battle of her life against cancer, you can just put "For Judy" in the subject line and send it to me, and I will see to it that it gets to her. Send it to me at Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. Judy is the executive director of Coal River Mountain Watch, and is among those whom I cite nightly, as I will now, that this program is sponsored in part by Coal River Mountain Watch, and that they are, in fact, the bravest, hardest-working people I know, CRMW.net and CoalRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, one of these days I gotta get that sound effect of the Carnival Midway music. You know the one I'm talking about. That one. Or maybe the saber dance while we're at it, or the march of the elephants, or the march of the children from The King and I. Who knows? But we gotta have some music. We've got an anthem for, or an opening hymn for prayer meeting Wednesday. By God, we need something for Monday. We need some carnival barking music because this is Moran Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob. It's Monday, and I'm thrilled to pieces to be back behind the microphone. Saturdays and Sundays are the dullest days of my life. Ho! This is going to be a good one. Yes, yes, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. You will not believe your ears. You will not believe your ears at the stunning array of Morans presented for you this Monday evening, Eastern Standard Time. Just peek behind the curtains of the tent. Don't look too long without you get your ticket. You know, the tickets are only $2,500 a month. That should work out to about 25 cents for every person listening to the horn. Unfortunately, they don't pay for their tickets. Only a few of you do, so that works out. Everybody pony up $250,000. No, it's a joke. No, step right up. You will not believe your ears. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes of the program. We have Morans, oh plenty. We have violent Morans, crazy Morans, weird Morans, but all of them share one thing in common and one thing only. They are right-wing Morans. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Yes, indeedy, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. And, of course, we've got a lot of nominees. In fact, I had to remind Marty just before the show, he wanted to nominate Caribou Barbie. You know, Mussolini. You know, the Godzilla from Wasilla. He wanted to nominate her, and I had to remind Marty, no, she's been... We have retired her wolf's paw. She can no longer compete because Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, Godzilla from Wasilla need only look at her watch to do something moranic because she is, in fact, the walking embodiment of moranity.
No, we have to look elsewhere. Lucky for us, there's plenty of other bushes to beat. Oh, Jesus, the Secret Service will be here any minute. No, we got lots of... Did I miss something? Does William Shatner have a TV show? Is it online? Is it on an actual TV station? Does he have an interview program? Because this is nuts. Last night I was cruising around looking at you know, my favorite sites, my go-to sites, just to see what the Morans had been up to over the weekend, because Saturdays and Sundays are when the Morans come out from behind the baseboards and scurry around in the dark like the little human cockroaches that they are. And I saw this clip. This otherwise unexplainable clip. It's William Shatner interviewing Flush Flimball? Do I have that right? Yeah, I previewed it. Not kidding. But for our first Moran Monday nominee, who better than the oxymoron, the man who sent out thousands of dollars in a cigar box and was brought back thousands of dollars worth of street drugs and never did a day's time for it, at the same time that he had been railing for others to go to prison for exactly what he was doing. The man who takes somebody else's prescription for Viagra on an all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic and comes back with one missing. Who better, indeed, than Flush Flimball to begin our nomination process this Moran Monday evening on the Horn?
Here's my premise, and you agree with it or not, that if you have money, you're going to get health care. If you don't have money, it's more difficult.
If you have money, you're going to get a house on the beach. If you don't have money, you're going to live in a bungalow somewhere. Right. That's
right, but we're talking about health care.
What's the difference?
The difference is...
Okay, clearly the drugs did do more to his brain than we were initially willing to admit. What's the difference between living in a bungalow and having health insurance? Check me if I'm wrong, but does your bungalow come with a fully staffed medical team and a completely staffed pharmacy? Jesus Christ, don't tell Flush. If it does, he'll be over there and he'll be chewing up the goddamned OxyContin for the refreshing burst of flavor before you can say, Matt Drudge.